Here, and we want to be able to hear from you. We were in closed session and we discussed a stipulated expulsion, which we'll be taking action on shortly. We had a conference with labor negotiators regarding an unrepresented employee, and we gave direction to staff on that. And we reviewed possible action on employment, dismissal, or discipline, and also gave staff instructions on that item. And we've already discussed the consensus on the order of business, and the board is satisfied with moving the superintendent's budget recommendations. Excellent. And I need a motion on item 4.02, the stipulated expulsion.
I'll move approval of the stipulated student discipline agreement.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any questions or discussion by the board? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. And let's do the approval of the minutes. Item 4.03, it's the approval of the minutes of March 19th.
I'll move approval of the minutes of March 19th.
I'll second that. Motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by the chair. Any discussion? Any corrections? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. And this portion of the agenda is public comment. We do have some requests to speak on items that are not on the agenda, and we will take care of that right now. The public comment portion, both for the unscheduled public comment and for agenda items, are limited to 3 minutes per person. We want to be able to hear from everyone, and we want to be able to hear from you, but it helps if we can get you to be succinct within that 3 minutes. So, Jim, who do you have first?
Yeah, I just want to mention that we have a new device here that is a timer. It's on both up here and the podium, so when you begin to speak, I will start it, and then you can glance. It would be to your left on the podium and see how much time you've used and how much time you have remaining. These three people, I'd like them to be ready to come up and speak. Jill Gentile, Sue Cardoza, and Joe Cardoza. So in that order, please. And please state your name for us.
I hope you don't mind if I go first. I'm Sue Cardoza.
Please go right ahead.
Thank you. My name is Sue Cardoza. I'm a parent of a special needs child at C.L. Smith. And the reason I'm approaching the board today is I would like to ask the board to please consider the establishment of a parent advisory committee for special education parents. The reason I'm asking this is I really feel like there's a huge breakdown in communication between our, it's actually very broken from what I see as far as just any kind of communication that gets to our parents of our special needs kids. And we're very disconnected, disjointed, and there's a lot of things that I think would be very important for us to be able to sit down with the superintendent, with board members, with, you know, whoever else you might appoint to be part of that board, to be able to problem solve some of the issues that go on, so that we can work on a healthy communication to try and remedy some of the issues that I know that we have had in our family, but as well as just, you know, I know that there's other parents out there that would love to have that communication. It's really hard for them to get here, so I'm proud to be, you know, here representing them. And I know that there is a little bit of trouble with communication with the CAC board with SELPA. Those meetings are really hard to find out about, and apparently we have three representatives from this school district that we don't ever hear from at all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The Brown Act prohibits us from discussing an item that's not on the agenda, but I think Dr. Prater got your comments. Thank you very much.
Okay, we still have Joe Cardoza. Well, we have first Jill Gentile and then Joe Cardoza.
Thank you, Board and Dr. Prater. My name is Jill Gentile, and I would like this time to define my position as a non-paid volunteer parent support for families that need assistance through the special education IEP process. There are not many families include updates on staffing, training, and professional development, and occasionally guest speakers. The meetings give us the opportunity for parents to feel supported and address the issues within the special education system, whether they be negative or positive. This is a forum in which these issues are heard and addressed either immediately or addressed later by the administrators. There's a definite disconnect between SELPA and the special education parent community. The Community Advisory Committee, or CAC, representative should attend the parent advisory meeting so they can bring a list of trainings offered to the parents and appropriately provided to the students, and that relevant training is available to the parents and educators. It doesn't make sense to have a CAC representative for SELPA representing the special education services that are being met and training is being held if they haven't had communication or input from the parents that are in the trenches. In the last 2 years, I have personally attended about a dozen IEPs in your district. And in the many years I've personally been involved with the special education system, I see many areas of major concern. A true disconnect. I believe the effort put forward on this matter will benefit everyone. As the Parent Advisory Committee builds relationship, trust, parent involvement, and communication needed for the parents who feel that they do not have an outlet or a school support system. We have accomplished and established a new trust with Atascadero Unified. This is not to say that there are not flaws. We are acutely aware that there is ongoing work to be done, but the connections and mutual growth has been priceless. This is also a meeting that you do not have to include in your budget discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hello. I'd like to thank you all for your service, Board. For your reader.
State your name, please.
My name is Joe Cardoza, and my wife, Sue, spoke just before Jill. We have an 8-year-old special education at C.L. Smith, and I would like to ask you also to help us establish the Parent Advisory Committee structure group for the community of special education kiddos here in our district. As Jill mentioned, that building relationships, trust, parent involvement, and communication is key, I think, for the team in whole. And I'd just like to say thanks to my wife and Jill for their contributions. And parenting is very stressful as well as emotional, and we all appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Okay. Would anyone else like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing no one, we will close. Oh, I see a hand in the back. Come on forward, then. Let's, we'll sort it out. Sir, were you going to go ahead and wait until we're going to get to the agenda? Oh, okay. Go on. I saw you just.
Good evening to the board, District Dr. Prater.
Oh, thank you. Good evening to the board. My name is Theodore Zamorano. I'm a business teacher here at San Luis Obispo High School. And like I said, this does pertain to the budget, but it's not specifically laid out. And what I'm talking about is deep in the proposed budget cuts is a class that's currently a graduation requirement. That's computer applications. It would not be possible to let go a business teacher as long as the course remains a graduation requirement. And the district has been discussing the possibility of not making computer applications a graduation requirement, but also to have other classes replace it or to go alongside it as far as a computer technology literacy, I think is the name that they want to phrase it as. So I'm going to talk about the graduation requirement of computer applications and what it does. And I think to all the board members, I did put a letter in your packet, and I'm sure you got it. Thank you very much. Changing a graduation requirement, as we know, should be thought through and investigated thoroughly. I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm wondering if there has been any communication with all relevant stakeholders, parents, students and staff specifically. Computer applications teaches document formatting for letters, essays, and reports, using spreadsheets for school use and for personal use. It also can be, gives you the skills necessary to be successful in school and also to gain employment. What's going to happen if the students don't have computer applications as a graduation requirement? Will they get the computer literacy technology skills? How will they get that to succeed in the 21st century? The next question I have is, if other courses are proposed to give the students this necessary skills, how are they going to fit that in the curriculum? What are they going to have to take out to be able to teach these same skills that we teach? Found out is, and we base this survey not on the proficiency, but on just a competency. Oh, gosh. Anyway, the competency is lower scaled. It's a lot less involved, a lot simpler questions. And it was still pretty amazing what these students didn't know when they came in. And I will hurry up because I see I'm out of time. Let me ask you a question. How much research has been done so far to gather enough information to make a really intelligent decision on whether computer applications should not be a graduation requirement?
I think that's going to have to be a rhetorical question since we're not allowed to discuss
that. Okay. Well, at least I want to put that thought in your head.
Okay, and I appreciate it, and we will get the survey information that was provided, and we all received your letter, and I appreciate your comments, sir.
Okay, I ask the board, please keep it as graduation requirement. I truly appreciate it. I think our kids deserve this type of technology education.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Zamora.
Much.
And let's see, anyone else want to speak on an item not on the agenda? Please come forward.
I'm Eldra Avery.
Oh, sorry, Eldra.
That was a joke, you guys, huh?
I got the right button.
Okay. I want to thank you for everything you do for education. And if you know me, you know I love my job. So this comes right from my heart. I'm just going to read the letter that I gave to everyone, and then I have to take off to knitting. Thank you so much for caring about education. Thank you so much for all the hard work that you do for our students. I am grateful for your dedication to excellence, and I admire your generous contribution to San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It is because I respect the work you do that I submit my request on behalf of my colleagues. Please do not eliminate librarians in our necessary budget restructuring. To do so might be seen as an insult not only to education in general, but as an insult to every teacher like myself who credit librarians with our early fascination with books, ideas, knowledge, and education. My earliest library memories still evoke both wonder and nostalgia as I recall the scent of hardwood floors waxed to a bright sheen, rows and rows of books whose bindings called to me, "Read me, read me." The librarian who would stamp my books with the date due and gently offer suggestions that if I liked Dickens, I might try Anthony Trollope as well. My weekly library trips with my mother were invitations to an enormous world because the books took me places I might never visit. I read the entire Miss Pickerel series and will never forget stepping on my school bus with elevated heart rate because my beloved Miss Pickerel had just accidentally stowed away on a spaceship. In college, I found myself in tears of gratitude as I walked into the stacks for the very first time, because I knew that there was so much knowledge surrounding me, so many ideas, so many journeys that I would take. Librarians are the gatekeepers for humanity's stored knowledge. They invite us to the party of ideas. They share with us the keys which open the world's doors. Librarians know so much about what's out there. They help us with our research, with our searches, with our dead ends. We need librarians. We love our librarians. Vicki Carroll, our wonderful librarian, has helped all of us guide our students through rigorous research projects. She is such a fine instructor who works to make her directions clear and relevant. Without her, we would all be doing Google searches. With her, we can use much more sophisticated search engines. Honestly, Vicki has done so much to bring our library into the 21st century. I really want my students to get carried away with books. I want them to find the kind of inspiration in a library that I found. And I think everyone in this room is interested in education. You all have to understand this library thing. I think we have to support our library. Thank you.
Any more? Okay, we'll close unscheduled public comment, and we will move on. I see we had a student representative show up, so please bear with us for a moment. He really needs to get back home and get to work, so go right ahead.
Thank you. My name is Scott Hicks. I'm the junior class president at Solo High. Right now, Kai's going through surgery, so he cannot be here. So, at San Luis Obispo High School, our ASB is going through the election process for next year's officers, as well as planning for next year while trying to finish off strong this year. We have a staff appreciation week coming up. Got a lot of goodies planned for that, including a barbecue and a nice thing we're doing for the teachers, which we don't want to disclose yet. Silver. And the Advisor of the Year Award for both region and state went to our teacher, Jeff Lemkuhl. All right. And all the It's no doubt from our great shop facilities on campus. And all gold medal winners will be attending the national competition in Kansas City in June. And there was a lot of them, as I said. We have a ninth grade parent orientation coming up soon. So that's new ninth grade parents for next year. We're going to get them oriented with our school and what they need to know. And finally, we have only 42 days left to graduation. So right on. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your input. Okay. All right. We will move on to item 7.01. Dr. Prater.
President Millard, it's my just clarifying. The 9.01 is the recommendation.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's
where we wanted to go. Is that what you wanted us to do?
Yeah, I was looking at the state budget update. So 9.01. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, members of the board. I'm going to start off here, pass the baton to Mr. Miller, and Dr. Prater will be our closer here for our presentation tonight. It's interesting to me. I came to the school district. I felt like I was this young site administrator, and now, almost 20 years later, I'm the person at the district office who's been around the longest. And so, anytime there's a any kind of historical perspective, they say, let's get Robinette, the old guy, to fill us in on the history. So I don't know how that happened. But I do want to just, and it's actually up there, I am going to read somewhat from this because it's kind of difficult to summarize, but I do want to give a little bit of a sense of where we've come over the last 10 or 15 years in terms of budget, because this board has seen, you know, real ebbs and flows because we are a community-funded basic aid district, that many school districts have seen those same ebbs and flows, but they're not quite as severe as some of those ones that we have seen in San Luis Coastal. As a community-funded basic aid district, our board has been able to make decisions on a much richer revenue stream. In fact, even if you were to adopt the superintendent's recommendations, we will be better off on a funding per student ratio than most school districts around us. But what's important is that we always figure out a way to align our resources to our goals. What is it that we're trying to accomplish, and how can we align those resources to them? A couple of the board members remember back in the early 2000s, and a couple other board members were on the budget project team at the time when we had the unfortunate situation of having to cut about $10 million within a two-year period because of a change in the property tax structure of our largest contributor, PG&E. But we aligned our resources to those, we aligned our program goals to those dwindling resources. We closed three elementary schools and combined schools. We found cuts by cutting administrators, clerical positions, service positions. We eliminated music and physical education programs for first through third graders. We made these the responsibility of the classroom teacher. We altered our cleaning and maintenance schedules and laid off a large number of custodians and maintenance individuals. We stopped buying things. And we didn't raise class sizes during that time. In fact, we kept a 20-to-1 cap at the K-3 level during that difficult period, and we managed to get through that period. Shortly after this, things got better. They got much better. We had enhanced state categorical funds, and as the legislatures sometimes do, they put all kinds of strings attached to what we could spend money on. We had art and music grants. We had specific counseling grants. We had ROP enhanced funding. But we aligned these new resources to our goals. We were able to bring back people who had been laid off. We began rebuilding a depleted reserve. Our board voted to have a 10% reserve for economic uncertainty so that we could weather hard times. We took a philosophical stance that we should spend some of this newfound money on programs. Instead of socking it away and saving it, let's spend it on the kids that it's intended for, with the caveat that we may have to at some point pull back on these, that the very things that we're spending money on we may need to revisit at some later time. So what did we do? We created collaborative release days for our employees. We added reading recovery staff. We increased our budget towards English language support. We added Spanish translation service hours to the school sites. We vastly expanded our special education student services department. We added more. By 2008, all school districts, including our own, began to see a reversal in fortune. The fiscal crisis that all levels of our society had been coping with also dealt a stark blow to San Luis Coastal. So what did we do? We aligned our goals with our resources. Under Dr. Prater's leadership, when he came, we examined our commitment to students and re-examined it. While our test scores and standard achievement indicators would indicate a good district, the underlying data was troubling. The achievement gap between white students and our fastest growing groups, which were those students in poverty, Hispanic students, EL students, homeless students, was embarrassingly bad. We received a report that was updated again last year from the Education Trust West, report that indicated that San Luis Coastal was number 141 out of 146 in the state of unified school districts of 5,000 students or more in terms of that achievement gap. We were on the very bottom of the list. Our mathematics achievement for students once they reached high school was also troubling. We didn't have a clear vision for the technology plan we would need to have for the digital natives that we were now teaching. So we spent some of our reserves, we reallocated our resources, we changed some things around, we created a strategic initiative for student success. We invested in employee compensation, we added instructional coaches and teachers on special assignment, we altered our EL program focus, and we put a lot of energy into professional development, specifically in English and mathematics. We created renewed community partnerships with nonprofits and service providers. We opened local family resource centers at little or no cost. We entered into a solar power purchase agreement that will lower energy consumption dollars for us. We became relentless about the analysis of student data so that we serve all students. We established a preschool program for those students who were financially unable to enroll in preschool. We began a new teacher evaluation system that will emphasize professional growth, accountability, and a unified commitment with our bargaining unit, this SLCTA, to excellent classroom instruction. We also grew as a school district. We added 393 students from 2008 to the present, which has increased our personnel budget by about $1 million. Last year, it became clear that we needed to make substantial cuts as a result of flattening local revenues, state takeaways, increasing student enrollment. With an $8.5 million projected structural deficit, we began a two-year process of reducing that discrepancy, because to cut this much in 1 year would be devastating. We cut $4.3 million from our expenditures last year, as this board is aware, while continuing forward momentum on our strategic initiatives. We didn't lay off an employee, except for an administrative position at the district office. We did have some temporary employee cuts. We stopped some of our athletic transportation. We cut our professional development budget. We replaced district and site teachers on special assignment with an instructional coaching model aligned with our initiatives. We cut maintenance, library service, and special education staff by not replacing retirees. We offered a substantial early retirement incentive, which actually brought three times the usual number of retirees, which really helped us reduce our budget. We made some modest increases in class size, but did so without laying off employees. We cut back on the number of students we serve in our reading recovery program. We cut our attorney fees. We eliminated primary music for grades 1 through 3 once again. We made substantial cuts to our adult education program. We stopped some of our support to the Pacheco program. We stopped buying new computers. I'll let Mr. Miller explain kind of what we're facing right now. But I do want to say that in spite of last year's budget cuts and in spite of what we are recommending for you tonight, we're making incredible strides because we're aligning our resources with our goals. Our test scores, which is just one measure, it's not the most meaningful measure, but it's a measure, are rising dramatically. You've seen that. You saw our reports from last year. Especially with those students we're targeting, with those groups that we're saying all means all. We are educating preschoolers who would otherwise not have access. We have the highest compensated employees in the region. We have a sixth grade STEAM initiative ready to launch. Our instructional coaching model, our teacher evaluation system are bringing the art and science of great teaching to all of our students.
Derived from a number of actions that come from outside of our own district. Over the past several years, the district has been impacted by the state's imposition of a fair share of pain takeaway that over 3 years equals $11 million. It recently has increased to an annual reduction in state funds to the San Luis Coastal District of $4.4 million. We've dealt with these shortfalls by reducing various aspects of our budget, but avoiding any layoffs of personnel. We essentially have used our reserves to bridge over and avoid the layoffs of personnel. We essentially have taken away from our savings accounts in order to keep our programs in place. Not exactly aligning our resources with our goals, but using some of our resources to keep our goals intact. We, unfortunately, on January 15th, the governor revealed his plan to impose a permanent reduction of $4.4 million on our district and not repay the $11 million it had already diverted. This is an unexpected event, and it represents a radical change of how the district has treated how the state has treated districts during previous times of state reductions of allocations to districts. What they did in 1993 and 2003 is the same as what they've done in the last couple of years. They've taken money from districts. However, when their economic conditions changed, they paid those monies back, and they reinstated the funding base at its old level, thus making everybody whole. However, this year they didn't. They now have decided that they weren't going to pay us back and they were going to continue to make the imposition of the shortfall. As we absorbed the impacts of this blow to our fiscal condition, it became apparent that we would need to make reductions in our budget that would necessitate layoffs. The decision was grounded in the realization that as the $4.4 million reduction in revenue would be permanent, our district was facing a budget, and this is a number you need to keep remembering. 92% of our revenues are going to salaries and benefits. 92% of your income going to one particular allocation is not sustainable for the health of whatever organization you're dealing with. As part of our fiscal review by School Services of California, their recommendation was an immediate and effective solution to this problem. Additionally, the San Luis County Grand Jury issued a report on school district funding practices and strongly advised all districts to align their expenditures with revenues to discontinue the common practice of deficit spending. Kim, can you put up the chart? This chart represents in some detail what Rick, no, go back to the, yeah, what Rick was talking about in terms of our history. And if you look at these numbers, in 2011 and 12, the district had a deficit of $8.5 million. And by the way, that was only last year. When we set out to make our budget, we realized that correcting that deficit in 1 year was going to be devastating to more things than we wanted to confront. So we proposed a reduction of $4.6 million. The board actually approved $4.3 million of those recommendations. When we entered the first interim of this year, which was our first measurement of our budget, there was an established $7 million deficit. And you ask, you know, the math doesn't quite add up, so what happened? Well, the process between the 11-12 budget and the 12-13 first interim, many things happen to a district that are established by mandates and contracts and things we don't control. So there was a raise for teachers. There was a carryover to sites and departments that needed to be dispersed. Increased health and welfare costs were permanent, were became permanent and known. Increased the fair share contribution. The state had a fair share contribution of $3.9 million, I believe, in 11-12. It became $4.4 million for this year. All of those things added up made the first interim's deficit $7 million. And when we looked at what we were going to be confronted with at the second interim, between the first interim and the second interim, the district imposed $2 million worth of mid-year cuts, if you will. They took a look at different revenue sources, and we reduced our deficit to $4.3 million. Part of those mid-year cuts and increased revenues was the passage of Proposition 30. And while Proposition 30 was the opportunity for the governor to alter how he treated our district, it also had a clause in it called the Education Protection Act that allocated $200 per student of state. For those of you who can do the math that I can't do, but that explains why the numbers turned out the way they are. Okay? Now, budget process. The board engaged in many different discussions of how the budget process ought to look and the factors that they were comfortable with and were looking for. But essentially, our budget process is constructed around myriad laws established by the state of California that govern our schools and impact our ability to reduce our workforce and make particular moves within our budget. We prepared a series of actions for the board's consideration prior to March 15th deadline for noticing employees as a preliminary notification. Staff looked at many different scenarios and considered every imaginable alternative. Ultimately, we decided to target reductions of $2 million to certificated staff, $1 million to classified staff, and to reduce or eliminate $1.5 million of programs not associated with salaries. The key piece, guys, is the salaries. 92% has to be reduced somewhere in the neighborhood of 84%. Implementation of these recommendations, $3 million cut in salaries, will put the district at 88% of its revenues. Still not 84, but awfully, well, considerably closer than 92. When we considered classified reductions, two viable options became apparent to achieve the amount of reductions necessary. Increase class sizes and lay off over 20 classroom teachers. That was one choice. consider non-classroom positions, district office administration, TOSAs, instructional coaches, secondary library, and K-12 counseling services. None of the numerous other areas of certificated staffing would generate the needed savings. So when you looked at those two areas, those are the only areas that, taken in total, represented the ability to reach the $2 million level. Neither option was desirable. We reduced district administration, teachers on special assignment, instructional coaches, librarians, and English learner teachers. These steps did not achieve our goal. The next practical option was to eliminate counseling at the elementary level and reduce secondary counseling. These actions could result in a $2 million staffing savings. Secondly, district staff looked at classified positions. Excuse me. We can achieve transportation savings by reducing bus routes from the current 28 to 16. We would do this by eliminating high school home-to-school busing, loading buses to their maximum, and increasing the parent pay fee from $1 per day to $2 per day. Consolidating custodial services would reduce the equivalent of 5 positions, which would only impact 2 individuals. Additional reductions to clerical, instructional aides, library assistants, and paraeducators can be achieved. Layoff recommendations are proposed for 2 transportation office employees and a district administrator. These actions would result in about $1 million savings. Lastly, we reached out to our school district community for ideas, feedback, and opinions about the $1.5 million remaining reductions needed. We went to every school site to explain these issues with site personnel. We created blogs and encouraged email access to allow parents, students, and the community a pathway to participate in the dialogue. We set up meetings with 8 interest groups that represent special segments of our organization: PTA, DLAC, employee unions, affected employees, and principals were all part of the process. During these meetings, people had an opportunity to discuss their concerns and make recommendations. As you might guess, concerns regarding setting priorities and understanding the process were paramount topics of discussion. The explanation was fairly straightforward. In order to realize the budget reduction target, few options existed beyond raising class sizes, resulting in teacher layoffs, or reducing library and counseling services. Both options would achieve the necessary reductions. However, priority was given to maintaining current class size ratios and preserving teachers. Throughout the process, the proposal to cut elementary counselors was the most controversial. As the groups were given the staff explanation, they were also asked, if not counselors, then who? In each instance, none of the 8 interest groups could offer an alternative. We must reduce our salaries and benefits in alignment with our resources and goals. Coming decision-making are going to be resources for Common Core and how to provide technology in the classroom. We need teaching materials, and we need a way to present that curriculum to the students. We need infrastructure and equipment to be effective, and how will we do that with no money, because more than 92% of your revenue goes to salaries and benefits. In the end, if we don't do the budget cuts as recommended this year, or some form of budget cuts to the dollar amount that we're talking about, you will be chewing up your reserves and leaving yourself no surpluses to work with in the future when you come to make decisions about quality education for the children. It's an important thing to realize. The final process that the district went through was the budget process team, made up of about 16 individuals, some advisory, 11 of them participatory, and we went through a series of choices to be made. The choices that ended up rising to the level of recommendation to the superintendent were, and the board made this first one, summer school. everybody voted for that because it was already a done deal. So that was a simple decision. The second decision was the Wi-Fi project that has been budgeted for next year, at $800,000. And it was determined that putting that off would be a source of substantial budget reductions to get to the $1.5 million level. The third priority that was stated was the elimination of the school resource officer. That's a $200,000 cost, and it had 11 out of the 11 votes. The fourth reduction in terms of priority was a 20% reduction to, site allocations. And it was $185,000, and it turned out to have 9 of the 11 votes. The final set, and there was probably 5 other options available, were not as dramatic in terms of dollars, nor did they gain much in the way of support. But reducing professional development by $50,000 had 7 of 11 votes, and eliminating $65,000 from reading recovery had 4 of 11. Those 6 recommendations amount to the goal of $1.5 million that the budget process team was charged with making the recommendation to the superintendent. And that's what we did. I'll give it to Dr. Prater.
Thank you. I just, ladies and gentlemen, there are seats up here on the front row if you'd rather sit down. Okay, you wouldn't expect to see the aversion about the front row in this crowd, but it's,
good evening, board. Suffice it to say that this is probably the most difficult thing that a school board has to do, and certainly one of the most difficult things a superintendent must put together. There's nothing in what I'm about to say to you that I want to do as much as I feel it's my responsibility and duty to present to you. You've heard the story that has brought us here today from Mr. Robinette. You've heard the process that was used and the fiscal constraints that we're under from Mr. Miller. And from there, I'd like to bring you my recommendation. But before, I'd like to create a context. The context I want to create was brought to you actually in October 2012 in my state of the district. I anticipated that the state of California's fiscal condition wouldn't necessarily improve for us. Even though Prop 30 passed, I knew that Prop 30 had thorns all around it for basic aid districts. But it was very difficult to express that because I knew that Prop 30 was probably in the best interest of public education in California. So I supported it for those reasons. As a superintendent in a basic aid school district, community-funded school district, I knew the underbelly of Prop 30. And sure enough, that came to fruition. With the passage of Proposition 30, more revenue was generated. Taxes are going to be raised on all of us, and at least for the next 7 years. Those monies will indeed go to public schools. But they're going to public schools, not necessarily to our school district. So what happened as of effective January 15th when the governor proposed his budget recommendation, what came of that was a slippery slope for San Luis Coastal and other community-funded school districts. As Mr. Miller stated, the $11 million that we've given up, when I designed the state of the district, was I imagined our district in a world of fewer resources and diminishing resources. And I asked myself, what are the most important things that we must pay attention to? What are the things that are most important to get us and our school district where it needs to be? And so from that, I derived 3 points, actually 4 points. And I'd like to share those with you before I present my recommendation. The very most important thing we must do is we must ensure high-quality instruction in all of our classrooms. Our kids deserve nothing less than that. High-quality instruction, great teaching, makes all of the difference. Yet, sometimes in school districts, we take our eye off the ball and fail to support that. And we've come a long way in San Luis Coastal, evidenced by the Education Trust West report that Mr. Robinette mentioned. We went from the bottom 3% to the 58th percentile in 1 year because we focused, because we put our energies towards these things that I'm going to present to you. High-quality instruction is supported by a strong teacher evaluation tool. Now, our evaluation tool is unique because we bargained it collaboratively with our teachers' union. The teachers and the administration came together and developed a collaborative evaluation tool, a format that is unique in California. We happen to think it has the most promise for our future. Yet it's in its infancy stages. So providing a great tool to generate great discussions around our professional capital, which are our teachers, that is the aspect that we have to pay most attention to, as well as the idea of instructional coaching. This can't be underestimated. This too is still in its infancy stages in San Luis Coastal, but just like a pro golfer or a pro baseball player or a pro basketball player has specific coaches to help them with their fundamentals and their techniques, so too do teachers deserve that. Instructional coaching will turn the tide. When teachers are learning new developing skills, these coaches will help provide that third leg of the stool, the teacher, the principal, and the coach, to help generate the best quality instruction that we can. The third piece to that is professional training. One of the things we shortchange our profession with is quality professional training. This is what we need to do, in my view, in my vision, to make sure that we prioritize. The second piece is literacy and expression. We can't underestimate the importance of knowing, developing powerful readers, powerful writers, and powerful speakers. Literacy and expression is the hallmark of any successful individual in the 21st century or in the 19th century. Knowing how to speak well, knowing how to read effectively, and knowing how to write well is a critical life skill. Our kids deserve that. What are we doing? We're generating our focus on a comprehensive literacy model in elementary ranks. We are working on Writer's Workshop. We just started that last year, and we're already seeing tremendous results as a result of that program. Leveled literacy instruction combined with reading recovery will ensure that kids don't fall through the cracks, so they don't leave our elementary schools failing to know how to read. Because we know by the time they get to fourth grade, they have to read to learn. They can't be learning to read in fourth grade. They'll simply not be successful in our classrooms, not with the curriculum and the rigorous nature of that curriculum. And finally, under literacy and expression, I put in preschool. Preschool is an incredibly important component. When in our kindergarten classrooms, it's not unusual for 25% of our students to not ever have attended school before they reach our kindergarten program. Well, what that means is the teacher that's teaching kindergarten has a gap that's too far to navigate. It's simply, we're never going to get where we need to go without early intervention. Our own President of the United States spoke to that in his State of the Union. It's critical that we continue to do this, because those kids that have access to preschool, we know they start kindergarten ready to go on a similar plane. It's a critical component. And then the third piece is innovative practices, and we're starting to see these germinate in our district. Mathematics instruction, it's going to have a radical change in this state and in most of the nation over the next 2 to 3 years. With the Common Core transition of mathematics, it is truly a thinking curriculum. It is a way of learning mathematics that, by the way, if you go back to number 2, mathematics instruction is going to require that kids articulate in writing, promoting a digital environment for our students. Then I would say CTE, career pathways, and ROP are critical program models for kids, because not all kids are going to end up going to a 4-year university. But there are places where students can go and skill sets they can develop throughout high school that, if we design it correctly, they can enter into the workforce effectively. with jobs. And then we cannot lose sight of the importance of the A through G requirements. What that means is if our kids have those A through G requirements, then they can, in fact, have the skill sets to be successful in our California State University system. They can't get into the CSUs or the UCs without those classes. What we know is that Algebra 1 is the cliff that kids fall off of, and therefore a huge percentage of our kids in poverty and our English learners are not graduating with their A through G requirements, which means they end up going perhaps to community college without the necessary skill sets and preparation to really get themselves going into from the Cuesta or the community college domain to the four-year university. And then finally, the fourth piece, which brings it all home and which makes tonight's conversation most treacherous and difficult for me, is that we must align our resources to our goals. And 1 through 3 represent, I think, the best possible way to align our resources. This represents where I believe we need to go with a diminishing budget. If we put our monies here, we're going to be okay. Aligning our resources to 1 through 3, stopping deficit spending, will provide all of us and San Luis Coastal in particular with options. Options next year, options the year after, that we wouldn't have otherwise. So let me present to you my recommendation. My recommendation to you is to reduce expenditures in 2013-14, that's next school year, by reducing certificated expenditures by $1.9 million, classified reductions of $900,000, and non-personnel reductions of $1.4 million, for a total of $4.2 million in reductions. That's a two-year reduction of over $8.5 million that this board will have done, if you accept my recommendation. Well, what will this do? These recommendations maintain fidelity to the items 1 through 4 that I just shared, as discussed in the State of the District. My proposal will reduce staffing by approximately 40 positions out of the more than 900 employees in our district. That's a 4.5% reduction. If approved by the board, these reductions will bring our percentage of revenue devoted to salaries and benefits to approximately 87%. It doesn't get us to exactly where we need to go, but it's an important first step because it brings us in alignment with the San Luis Obispo County Grand Jury recommendation of ceasing to deficit spend. And it also lines us up with the recommendations that we found in our fiscal review by school services. I want to tell you before I go to my details of the recommendation, I want to tell you that I don't want to recommend any of this to you. I'll be completely frank. I don't agree with much of it at all. But I do believe that great thinking has gone into it. I do believe an important process has occurred. And I do believe that a decision must be made. There's probably a million different options and a million different possibilities, but this has been vetted by many different people who didn't like it any more than I did. But I think these recommendations will continue to maintain our focus on the items 1 through 3 that I mentioned and will bring us in alignment with our budget. So I'd like to go through the details of the recommendation. Under certificated personnel, I'm recommending that we replace our certificated librarians at the secondary level with classified library technicians. These are our library techs. That's 4 FTE reduction. Now, in California, it is a law that every district must have, unified district must have, a certificated librarian to oversee their program. And what many districts do is they coordinate with the County Office of Ed throughout California, and they actually partially fund that certificated librarian. In our case, we don't have that option, and we would prefer to add a library coordinator, and this coordinator will fill the glue student from what it currently is at 1 to 275 to 1 to 435, which is still within a relatively low ratio in comparison to California. At one point, the district received supplemental funds. This is the important part, to lower the counseling ratio, and we did that. But the state no longer provides those funds, and yet we continue to maintain those ratios. I also recommend that we eliminate the reduce the secondary teacher on special assignment focused on English learners and English TOSA, English ELD for the secondary level. That's a 1 FT savings of $77,000. I also am recommending that we hire a preschool teacher because we do not have a preschool program on the coast in Los Osos. So Baywood would be the recipient. We did a study this current year. Their current kindergarten class at Baywood, we did a survey, and nearly a quarter of the students attending kindergarten right now at Baywood, a quarter, have not attended preschool. No schooling. That's a remarkable statistic that we need to work on. At this point, we realize 6.5 FTE retirements for $260,000 savings. We are recommending that we eliminate secondary instructional coaches. That's three positions. The model at the secondary level is unique in that it's release sections of existing teachers in departments. And I'm recommending that we engage in a more reflective dialogue and discourse with the high schools and the middle school staff and administration to look at a different model, perhaps, one that we think might be more effective and more targeted on specific teaching practices. So we need to continue evaluating that. I'm recommending one FTE reduction at both comprehensive high schools. And they have worked that currently into their budget. The EL teachers that are at our elementary schools, a reduction of 1.5 FTE. And with this reduction, the EL services at the elementary level will still support, the EL teachers remaining will still be able to support the level ones and twos that are in our elementary schools. I'm recommending that we not fund the backup teachers that we currently fund for reading recovery, and that we provide those services outside of the school day, before or after school. And I also want you to know that I'm recommending that we eliminate a district office position. I'm recommending that we combine the duties of the director of IS&T and the director of secondary learning and achievement. Take those two directors and make it a one position for a savings of $120,000. That brings us to a total of $1.9 million reduction, or the equivalent of 20.5 FTE reduction in certificated employees. As we shift now to classified, again, I'll take a deep breath. I'm recommending that we eliminate high school busing. In order for that to happen, we'll have to eliminate 12 routes, reduce driver force by 8 positions, and we are currently working with the county and city transit authorities to provide alternative transportation services for our students that require busing. And this particular action would equate to $350,000. In addition to that, because of the reduction in the driver's positions, we are recommending we reduce administrative support staff by eliminating both the dispatcher and the trainer positions due to overall reductions in routes and drivers. The person that would pick up those duties would be the transportation supervisor, which, again, is a tall task. The custodian, I recommend that we reduce custodial services through attrition and a reallocation of time to sites and overtime and substitute use. This would be a 2 employee reduction, although a 3 FTE reduction. I recommend that we also reduce library assistant hours. We currently have at the elementary level, we have full-time library techs. At the middle school, we have a full-time teacher librarian with a four-hour library assistant. At the high schools, even though we've transitioned at Morro Bay High, we have a full-time teacher librarian at San Luis High and a eight-hour library assistant position. Analysis or the process that Russell did. This is my recommendation. The additional reduction of $50,000 for professional development. Keep in mind, mid-year we took $350,000 out of instructional services for professional development mid-year this year to meet our $2 million reduction. I'm asking for another $50,000 reduction. I think we all have to tighten this up. In AVID, I'm recommending that we maintain the program, because it is a valuable, very valuable program, but we reduce the funding for tutors. And I'm looking at the high school and the middle school principals and staff to seek volunteers for those roles. For summer school, you've already acted on that last board meeting, and I wanted to bring you an update to this. We, since our last meeting, and this reduction is $200,000, we've worked with the YMCA. We're going to offer an elementary program at Hawthorne Elementary along with lunch. And we're going to provide at Monarch Grove Elementary a summer school program along with lunch. We're offering a small middle school summer program for at-risk eighth graders. And for high school, as it says there, adult school, our adult school program will provide a credit recovery opportunity, as well as we'll learn later this week how Cuesta is going to work with us on the programs that they'll offer through their summer program there. The Wi-Fi infrastructure, I'm recommending we defer the installation of the wireless infrastructure at the two high schools. Right now, we have full wireless infrastructure at both middle schools per our plan, and we've implemented wireless at both libraries, at San Luis High and at Morro Bay High. I'm recommending that we defer that installation at both comprehensive high schools in full for next year until we understand the budget more clearly. I also recommend a 20% discretionary and SIP reduction to the sites. That's a $185,000 reduction. And I also recommend, and this is even though going against the budget committee's recommendation, and I realize that, I'm recommending that instead of the total elimination of school resource officer positions, I'm recommending that we have a 50% reduction in our current contracts with both Morro Bay Police Department as well as San Luis Obispo Police Departments. What that means is I would plan on working with both departments. I'm currently working with them to try and secure some sort of arrangement for a continuation of full services, but more to come on that. But I do believe, given the circumstances in our society, the uncertainties that we see, maintaining positive and ongoing close relationships with our city police forces are important. That brings total non-personnel reductions to $1.365 million. So as a recap, my recommendations are to reduce certificated savings by $1.9 million, total classified by $911,000, and total non-personnel savings by $1.365 million. That brings the total recommendation to approximately $4.2 million. What I would like to do, if it's okay, in terms of process, is I would like to leave this with you for discussion. I'm not asking for action tonight, but I would like Mrs. Holmes to maintain record of your questions so that we can follow up with those if we can't answer them this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. I think what we'll do first is we'll go to the public. Jim, how many do we have? How many?
We have 19 requests, and I'm assuming that if we went 3 minutes per request, that we would be close to an hour of public comment.
We typically have a 20-minute limit on the agenda, but I'm going to move that we waive the time limit for purposes of this meeting so that we have an opportunity to hear from the folks who've requested to speak. Do I have support from that on the board?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Do we need to have any discussion regarding the waiver of the time limit? Okay. Then we'll proceed. If you can be brief, we would greatly appreciate it, but we do want to hear from you. We'll limit the remarks to 3 minutes each, and we try to give a couple of names ahead of time so you can kind of be in the bullpen. We've also found it helpful that where you support what the speaker is saying, that if you raise your hand, it gives us a visual that we know about the support.
Counselors and the librarians. First of all, talk about the counselors. I think we need the counselors because they help with a lot of things like divorces or family issues, and there's someone to lean on when you need help. And if you have a classmate issue, they work with it on with you step by step. And we also have a thing called Steps to Respect, and that's where our counselor comes and teaches us about bullying. And then the next thing is that they support for low-income families and our homeless people in our community. And then for the librarians, they teach us the wonder of reading, and they help us with the Battle of the Books, which is a thing where everybody reads at least 5 books to qualify. And it's really fun because in the end of the year we have a battle. And also, if you need help on an essay, they'll recommend books for you. And they help organize our library. And thank you.
Thank you. I'm Terry Block, and I just wanted to say, Haley, that was really well said, unless she already left. I teach at Los Ranchos Elementary School, and the staff and I composed a letter, which you've already read, but wanted to share it aloud. Mr. Rick Robinette enlightened our staff about the current financial situation of our school district. He shared with us the areas that are being considered for cuts by the administration. One area highlighted was our counseling program. We believe it is important that you hear from the people who work with the school counselor on a daily basis to get a better understanding of how the cuts to this area would harm the students. Our school counselor is Dana Catlin. She has an 80% contract, is on the Los Ranchos campus Tuesday through Friday. A typical week includes duties such as seeing kids individually and in groups before school, during school, and after school. She supervises kids before school and during recess. She has 3 to 4 consultations with parents in person or over the phone. She has SST meetings after school as needed. She is part of the development and implementation of behavior plans and interventions to support the RTI model of service delivery, which can critically impact referrals for special education assessments. She conducts daily lunch groups, reinforcing appropriate social skills with select groups. Assisting busy classroom teachers with problems, such as criers, tantrums, conflict resolutions, bullying reports, hungry students, attendance issues, and the occasional taxi service. She helps us with scholarships, helps us with clothing requests. She disseminates charitable donations. She consults and plans with teachers daily. Due to scheduling, she often forgoes breaks to meet the needs of the students. She serves the entire school community with her accessibility. Her involvement with students during lunch and recess results in fewer conflicts. She will often open her game room, sponsor activities in the multipurpose room, meet small groups in her counselor's room, and operate the computer lab for students with whom she is attending to their socialization skills. Her ability to handle the emotional emergencies of the students frees us to teach, keeping distractions to a minimum. Disregarding the emotional needs of the students, parents, and staff in today's tumultuous climate would be a disservice to our school community. We ask that you weigh the difficult financial demands of the budget. Please do not include reducing the counseling program at any of the elementary schools so that we can best serve our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Did the other two folks want to tell us who they are? I assume you were there because you're supporting the comments.
I'm also a teacher at Los Ranchos fourth grade, and I completely support the letter, and a lot of our staff does. Kelly Cook, by the way.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy Greer, Los Ranchos third grade, and I have just had a student who wanted to see the counselor and bugged me four times within an hour because of his needs that day, and he wasn't focusing on what was going on in class. Great. So we need our counselors.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would like Dana Francis. 1 second, Dana. And Lee Brazil, followed by Vicki Carroll.
Is it possible for the counselors, for Rose Fowler, to go after Dana since it's...
Absolutely. We could do that, Rose, for you. And, yes, we can do that. Let me reset the timer, Dana.
Okay.
Go.
Oh, thank you. Good evening, board members, Dr. Prey, and oil changes. It's my understanding that in the last school year, all of the counselors combined generated $100,000 through the billing that we do throughout the year for the services that we provide. It's also my understanding that that is the equivalent of a school nurse. I just wonder if there's a domino effect. If we're not here in the fall to generate money, well, then you lose a school nurse. I'm not sure. Just a reminder that you're recommending eliminating people who make money for the district. The critical incident response team is a confidential list. There's my chart I did last night. It represents 56 people. There's administrators, psychologists, teachers, and counselors. When there's a tragedy in our school, we're asked to be the first responders. There's approximately 21 counselors currently on that list. Your decision about eliminating all the elementary counselors and reducing secondary will make it look like the next slide. So you've reduced your team by 20%, but you've reduced 50% of the people who are trained in grief counseling. Hope you won't need to call us next year. We won't be here. Mr. Miller has been great about using the term fair share of the pain. And Mr. Miller, it was great to go to one of your budget meetings, and I can only recall what I said when you said, what about elementary counselors? And he let me tease him, and when he said, well, what else could we reduce? I teasingly said, well, fiscal department comes to mind. And then we talked about administrators going on furlough during the summer. We talked about last in, first out. I love the initiatives. I love that we're a rich district who could think that. No fair. I got to do the oil change. Anyway, okay. Quick. So, quick. Oil change. Okay. Even in economic hard times, we don't stop flossing our teeth or changing our oil. Elementary counselors are like oil changing and dental floss. Please reduce it. Don't eliminate it. It'll be too costly. Okay, I will.
Rose, identify yourself, please, and then.
I'm Rose Fowler. I'm the school counselor at Del Mar Elementary. Thank you for hearing us out tonight and extending the time so we could be heard. I have been part-time at two different schools for about 10, 11 years. 2 years ago, they decided that counseling was critical enough that they made counseling available full-time at all the elementary schools, and I am grateful for that. There has been a lot of service that's been able to be provided to be there when the students are there and after school when the students are no longer available, but contacts can be made with outside agencies, parents, and make the referrals that need to happen. For an example, last year I saw a third grade student. He was autistic. I believe you have the letter in your packet from his parent. I would see him four times a week, sometimes multiple times a day. The intervention took hold this year. I saw him repeatedly at the beginning of the year, but now I see him maybe once a month. So it investment of time, like Dana said, a dollar of prevention is worth $7 of treatment. Typically, I serve about 60% of the school population. I had hoped for an opportunity to present information to you. These are the statistics I have collected over the years from 2000 until the present. This year I don't have mine done yet since we're still working. If you flip to the last page, you can look at the statistics there where it talks about 59% of the students I served during 11-12. The 200 parents represent 66% of their parents. 6% of those students were actually our families in transition. 6% of them went to SST, the number 33. You don't have the percentages on there. I'm giving them to you orally. Agency referrals were 33. 5% were referred to therapists. 9% were in our early intervention PIP program. That's our Tier 1 intervention. 8% went to IEPs, and we had about 4% that utilized our high school buddies program. Those services will not be available to those students next year if I'm not there, if I'm totally eliminated. I can understand your feeling of feeling overwhelmed with the budget and the tasks that you have at hand. I empathize with you in that regard. It is a tough job. I have a need to keep my job, which is very obvious, but I also have a need for that culture of care, which you committed to an initiative to be followed through and funded. Those students that I serve will be underserved or not served at all. It is difficult for them.
I'd school district as a counselor at Bishop's Peak Teach Elementary. Prior to that, I spent 6 years in Santa Maria at Fessler Junior High School as the counselor there. I've heard it said and read what a difficult task this decision is in eliminating elementary school counselor positions. And I don't disagree with that. I think it would be a very difficult decision for all of you to make. However, putting aside the fiscal report you've heard tonight, if I could just have you tap into my heart and my mind and that of my colleagues and that of the children at all the elementary school sites that we work at, I think the decision to eliminate elementary school counselors would be a no-brainer. I think you would see what we do, you would feel what we do, and you would see how we assist children and how we support them in not only their academic but their emotional well-being. For the past 25 years, you and previous board members and superintendents have worked to keep our jobs intact. On behalf of the school children, the children that I work with, and the children my colleagues work with, I ask for you to do the same. Thank you.
Would we please have Lee Brazil, followed by Vicki Carroll and Jessica Patton.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
I can see with the glasses, but then you're blurry. My name is Lee Brazil, and I'm speaking tonight about the proposed library cuts. My friend Vicki Carroll is a library teacher at San Luis High. I met Vicki in 2008 when I was teaching English. A year later, my son Elias started attending San Luis High. Elias has autism, but he did well at Laguna Middle School, and he was looking forward to San Luis High School, and especially to choir class. Because Elias loves to sing, and at Laguna, choir class was always the best part of every school day. Unexpectedly, 10 weeks into the first ninth grade trimester, my wife Julie and I received an email from the school's choir director. He wrote that he couldn't force Elias to leave the choir, but in good conscience, he also couldn't allow Elias to stay. So suddenly we had a huge problem. First off, you need to know that Elias is a sweet, polite young man who always tries his best. Elias, you want to stand up and wave? Thanks, sweetheart. Because of his autism, Elias really likes routines. He likes things to stay the same, and he likes to keep things organized. Additionally, and probably completely unrelated to the autism, Elias really likes books. So I thought of my friend Vicki Carroll, And I stopped by the library the next morning after I got that email, and I asked Vicki if she would give Elias the opportunity to act as a library assistant during the period when his choir class met. And without hesitation, Vicki welcomed Elias into the library. And Vicki has held high expectations for Elias ever since then. She helped him learn how to thrive in the library setting. And now, 3.5 years later, that one period a day that Elias spends working in the library is the best part of every school day for him. In June, Elias graduates from San Luis High, and after that, he'll be working 2 days a week as a volunteer at the City County Library downtown. And Elias will still work each Friday as an adult volunteer at the San Luis High School Library. And in case you're wondering, Elias still sings on the bus and in the car and at home and along with his iPod, so that part worked out okay too. But Elias's high school experience would have been completely different if Vicki Carroll hadn't made the choice to help Elias. And not surprisingly, Vicki Carroll's teaching makes a huge difference for so many of our students. She manages to combine just the right mixture of firm assertiveness and innate playfulness. You can see in the corners of her eyes that she loves to teach, she loves the library, she loves our students. But when you have 100 students and 2 adults sharing a library, things definitely run much smoother when everyone remembers who's in charge. And the respect that Vicki earns in the library before school, during lunchtime and after school each day pays dividends when she teaches researching to the students in our English and history classes. Vicki knows the importance that research will play throughout high school and college for our students. She knows that critical reasoning skills develop when our students can locate many divergent sources of information. Just a little more, please. And evaluate the relative strength and effectiveness of each separate viewpoint. She knows that research skills allow our students to support, with convincing evidence, what they believe is the best answer to any given question. So on a day like today, we're forced to consider how much those research skills are worth to our students. And we have to consider whether our students will have the same level of opportunity to develop those skills if our library is only a place to read and visit before school, during lunch, and after school. I can't offer any painless solutions to the budget crisis, but I believe that eliminating Vicki Carroll's library teaching position would be a disservice to our students, to our teachers, and to Elias's favorite teacher, Vicki Carroll. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Vicki Carroll.
Master's degree in counseling, also already enrolled in the library master's program. She's not the average teacher, library technician. And again, last year we felt like we'd be asking for a larger piece of the pie and somebody else would need to go without. Now you seem to be in that very same situation, having to choose between new state-of-the-art programs like STEAM and early childhood education preschools, digital versus analog, etc., and the tried and true programs that we already have, like certificated librarians, mandatory computer education, counselors, French. How do you choose? Both philosophical paths have strong research to show that they are effective, and one has already proven to be effective in this district. Then I had a new idea. You don't have to choose today. Apparently that wasn't new. You could put this choice on hold. You could examine other ways to reduce spending, such as ways that Lucia Mars found to hire, say, a sustainability coordinator, and they told her she had to save 3 times her salary in 3 months. She did that and more. I think she saved them $250,000 by now. In this district, there is money in our reserves to cover the losses we've suffered. Of course, I'm not advocating that a continued path of spending more than we bring in. That's ridiculous. It's been proven that students who attend preschool do better in school. But it's also been proven that students who have a certificated teacher librarian in their libraries do better on standardized tests. The results have now been proven in over half the states in the nation, that those test results. So the positions that are on the list are exactly the ones that support the priorities, the literary high-quality instruction, literary expression. And the district we have built to date is strong and effective. The direction we are traveling in is cutting-edge and exciting, but it's uncharted water. Before we fully commit to a course, we may need to reconsider all of our choices, so I urge you to postpone or reject the superintendent's recommendations at this time. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Jessica Patton. I'm a fifth grade teacher at C.L. Smith Elementary School. I'm also the fourth through sixth grade representative on the California Teachers Association Executive Board. So I am here tonight with my fellow teachers and colleagues to support our school counselors. By now, I'm sure you have all heard about Dr. Prater's student success initiatives and the goal for our district, Success for All, encompassing the three R's, relationship, relevance, and rigor, and most importantly, promoting a culture of care within our classrooms, schools, and district. Counseling services are directly aligned with Dr. Prater's student success initiatives and philosophy of education, in which he states, America's greatest resources are in its people, all its people. We must educate all of our students to high levels, regardless of their cultural, ethnic background, socioeconomic profile, or status upon entering our schools. Dr. Prater suggests that all students have a filter that either allows learning to occur or blocks it from occurring. Counseling supports our students and allows them to filter out what they need in order to learn daily. Our district is pushing teachers to work towards these goals. However, without counselors, many students won't be prepared to face the rigor and relevance of our everyday education. According to the California Department of Education, California has made important strides in class size reduction, higher academic standards, greater accountability, and improved teacher preparation. The missing link in these initiatives is to improve student learning is the need for more school counselors. That's from the California Board of Education, Department of Education. According to Dr. Prater, our district's top educational priority is high-quality instruction. Counseling services are an essential piece in teachers' ability to deliver the highest quality of instruction possible. I hope tonight that you take into consideration the proposals my fellow teachers and I have come up with to keep our counselors in our schools, and realize that counseling is an essential service in our district, not a disposable one. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Brittany Andrews. I teach fifth grade at Smith as well. I want to say that as a teacher, I look at each of my students as individuals, and they each come to me with a unique set of circumstances. And every day in every lesson, I attend to these circumstances. I think about them as I plan for differentiating my instruction so that it's appropriate and accessible to them. Like kids, each school in our district has its own set of special circumstances, and I only feel qualified to talk about Smith's set of circumstances, and so I'm going to attempt to talk about a couple of those now. Smith is a Title I school, and it's approximated that this year, out of our general education, city resources, social services, etc., for all these reasons, and because we believe that all means all, we need our counselors on campus, in our schools, daily. They protect the integrity of our classroom instruction, and they facilitate that culture of care on our site. Thank you.
Is Danielle Fall?
Hi, my name is Danielle Falk, and I'm a sixth grade teacher at C.L. Smith. And part of our reality is how our students and parents feel about counselors. So I've brought some letters and thoughts from them, from students and parents at Smith, who are not able to make it to tonight's meeting. And these are letters and emails, letters from third to sixth grade students, a full range, and parent emails. And these were just done on a voluntary basis. This email reads, "My daughter is a member of a girls' counseling group at C.L. Smith, and I have seen concrete positive results in her ability to manage conflict and stresses. School counseling services are a vital part of a healthy school environment and provide an important safe place for those students who need assistance in handling the many emotional issues that arise at this young age." A letter from a student. A student wrote about an experience in which they felt nervous. Everybody was nervous. "The counselors came in and told us everything would be fine. The counselors made me feel much better. Some of us have even made friends with our counselors. The counselors are very, very important to us. They make us feel safe and comfortable. I stand for what I believe in, and what I believe in is that we all want to keep the counselors. Just think, what would the kids do without counselors if they had been bullied? They couldn't express their feelings with anyone. No one could comfort them. Just think, when you were a kid, have you ever been bullied? Have you ever had a counselor? Don't they make you feel happy?
These are my reasons. I would not like you to cut the counselors. They have provided food for my family and social skills for my sister and myself. They have even stopped the bullying to my friends in the other classes. At my other school, we didn't have counselors to stop the kids from bullying, vandalism, and other things. I am new this year to this school, and when I came here, I feel like I've been here for 7 years. They have helped so much for me to, or they have helped me so much to fit in and make new friends. Now I have tons. So when I know that they might be leaving, I'm afraid that this school will become like the others that I've attended out of this district. If you take them, it's like tearing everybody's friendship with each other apart. They've helped me through a really sad time in my life when my parents got divorced. They will listen to you and only tell people if you allow them. Otherwise, their lips are sealed. And best of all, they're kind, understanding, and helpful no matter what the situation. They are some of the most amazing women ever. I can also go to them, the counselors, whenever I need help with something, or if I'm sad, or even if I have news with something new. But they have done so much for us all, like help us with problems of rumors, problems of teasing, problems with bullying. They make me feel happy because I know I have someone at school to talk to. They helped my best friend when she was going through a really tough time. Right there were the counselors by her side, helping her feel a lot better. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindley Sainsbury. Lindley Sainsbury.
Is it okay if I go first? My name is Kayla Campa.
Sure.
Thank you very much. I am also a teacher at C.L. Smith. I teach third grade. Thank you for having me tonight. I will be reading just a list of some of the things the counseling program at our school provides. Referrals to Big Brothers and Big Sisters program. They coordinate with our Latino outreach program. Birthday pencils to all students, free computers to families, free school supplies to students, monthly coordination and home delivery of our food bank services, classroom presentations involving steps to respect, literature, and coordination with our sheriff's department, crisis daily, conflict resolution, SSTs weekly, IEP meetings, conferences. They assist families with assessment processes and paperwork, social skills groups, individual counseling, lunch groups, referrals to mental health, teacher consultations, parent consultations, peace patrol, Christmas presents for students, attendance support with attendance and truancy. They communicate with therapists. They support scholarship programs for all of our students, referrals for scholarships including PEAK, and they also have created this year a bully-free zone program at our school site. So some of the teachers here at our school site came together and understand that budget cuts need to happen, and we tried to come together and think of some of the things that could be done to prevent counseling as part of that budget cut.
Thank you, board members, for having our teaching staff make this presentation to you tonight. And before I start, I just wanted to say hello to Elias because he's an alumni of C.L. Smith, and it's really nice to see him here tonight. Okay, so I have been a teacher with San Luis Coastal for 17 years, and this is my 20th year actually as a teacher. I don't come to budget problems, with lightly. I understand that. My parents were both teachers. My dad taught sixth grade for 30 years in a Title I school in inner city Spokane, Washington, and my family got heavily in debt when my parents were going back to school because they were not educated when my brothers and I were young, and my brothers worked as janitors at night, and my dad was a teacher by day and a janitor by night as well. So I understand hard times, and I know that we're on those right now, and I gratefully respect the wonderful administrators that we have and their decision-making process and what they've gone through. And I do apologize that I'm coming to this part of the decision making at the 11th hour, but I do have an idea that my lovely staff of highly educated women and men have briefly discussed. So we need our counselors, as you have heard, for many reasons. And I work with the staff of general educators and special educators at C.L. Smith that have given you your money's worth as a Board of Education and as administrative staff for years. I have, as of my 17 years at C.L. Smith, I have worked 10 years doing an after-school AVID program on a voluntary basis. So my duty day ends at 3:30, not 2:30. And sometimes it is even started at 7:30 because I ran a before-school intervention program. And all of these ladies behind me that are upper-grade teachers, and Kayla as a third-grade teacher, and Roy and Stephanie as a third-grade teacher, have done that as well. So, you know, we know I'm one of the expensive teachers. I understand that. But I promise you that I give you your money's worth every day. It's my job to do that. I fully understand that. But one of the jobs that I can't do, because I'm really excited about doing guided math. I did it today. I love it. Writer's workshop. I'm on my third unit. I love it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep my training going as an educator. It's boring to be the same. I'm not going to do that. But I can't be a counselor the way Heather Senecal and Maribel Chavez do that. One of the things that we are in Dr. Prater's announcement of the Educational Trust West report, one of the things we are getting an F at as a district is our achievement gap between Latino learners and Caucasian learners. We have had for a year Maribel Chavez as our Hispanic counselor, and the difference in the way that our students have reacted to her is dramatic. We have a Latina speaking Latina to the culture of Latinos, and she does an amazing job of bridging that gap for all the educators. So my students, myself, and my teachers have volunteered this next year to give up our music teacher. We are willing to do that. It affects all of us with the prep time, an hour a week. And we would rather have our counselors as a must-have. We see that as a necessity. We see right now that maybe music for us is a luxury. Sadly, we feel that way. But you know, we want our counselors. We're willing to give up our prep time and our music program to keep them. Thank you.
The next three speakers are Sierra. One name only, Sierra. Yeah, I see her coming. Christine Gent and Judy Neuhauser.
This is against OSHA. Let me turn your chair for you. Safety. Counselors are all about safety.
Thank you. There you go.
Hi, my name is Sierra Caravarin. Our schools need counseling. It helps us focus on our schoolwork. If there weren't counseling, we would be behind on our schoolwork. That's why we need counseling. Not only because of that, but they help with bullying and help with family issues. Counselors are the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Sierra. Christine, followed by Judy, followed by, Rose has already spoken, followed by Michelle.
Good evening. My name is Christine Gent. I'm here to tell you my story, my family story. Cameron is my son. He's 8 years old. He's a wonderful, kind, happy boy who loves people. He loves learning. So we assumed when school started, it would be a breeze for him. And then kindergarten started. In the first 4 months of kindergarten, with this information, Cameron started second grade at a new school, C.L. Smith. Today, thanks to the expertise of the counselors there, the teachers and the aides, today he is like a new child. He loves school, and he's testing above grade level. He wants to be an archaeologist. The counseling staff are teaching him how to deal with his anxiety and the social situations. I would like to thank the counselors for saving Cameron. I cannot imagine how he would be today or 10 years from now if he did not get this help. If the services are cut in counseling, what do you plan to do with these children? They cannot be sent to the office, and they cannot be ignored. Thank you.
Following Judy will be Joe Bates.
Hello, my name is Judy Neuhauser. I'm a third grade teacher at Monarch Grove. I'm really thank you for that last story, because as a teacher, I see a lot of this. I have students who are underneath their desks. I have students whose parents are being divorced. Our school has recently put boards on its windows so we have a calm room so children can't throw themselves through the window. We at Monarch Grove haven't had a counselor this year, for the most part. Our counselor was on medical leave and finally took retirement because of medical issues. So we know what it's like right now to be without a counselor. And I have to tell you, it is profoundly affecting our instruction. So while I totally support Dr. Prater in saying that we need to have great instructional lessons, we need to have great instructional techniques, they mean nothing when a student is in an anxious state, an anxiety state, similar to looking out for the lion that's going to eat them. And that's physiologically what they're going through when they get into a state of high anxiety, and they can't learn. So we as teachers have to think, what are our options at that moment? Do we allow them to stay under the desk? Do we send them to the office where there is no counselor? Do we stop and work with that child who needs that human contact right then and take that instructional time away from the rest of our students? That's the choice that we make over and over and over again. Can you afford not to have counselors in elementary? This is foundational. If you build a magnificent castle in high school on a foundation that is wobbly, your castle doesn't last. Thank you.
Jill Bates, followed by Carolyn Neal.
Hi, good evening. My name is Jill Bates, and I used to worked for San Luis Coastal. I was an elementary counselor at C.L. Smith, then at Monarch Grove, and I actually started out as a primary intervention program at Hawthorne Elementary. You've heard some great speakers tonight talk about the value of elementary counseling. I'd like to piggyback a little bit on some history, because I was around a long time ago, and I'm currently not working in the district, but I still totally believe in early intervention. I work now as a marriage family therapist, and I just think that unless we intervene early, we're by the time they're in, you know, high school, and a lot of times it's too late. I came to the board numerous times over my tenure in the district and got a lot of support from several of the board members. And in times of budgetary constraints, I always felt like that's when we were at our best. I felt like that's when we got creative, when we found other resources. I remember having some bake sales, selling t-shirts to provide to get supplies for the counselors. We at one time had somebody writing grants specifically in this district, and we got money through grants to have the counseling program in place. I hate to see the word eliminate, because when you eliminate something, it's very difficult to ever get it back again. My hope is over my time in the district, there were years that I started out with 12 hours a week, and then somehow some money came around and they added another 2 hours, maybe come January. But if you eliminate, you don't have that option to, even if money does come available or some creativity does happen, if you don't have a person there to add to, then you have nothing. And I really hope that, you know, that's, I think, the value of this district that I've always believed in so much, is there's a lot of bright people here who can become more creative than just let's eliminate a program completely. I know I had a couple of conversations regarding the time when I
think we need some solutions. You have to cut $4.2 million, and these counselors sound incredible and necessary. So when I looked at Dr. Prater's January 15th, you know, how much things were, this wasn't the official budget. But one of the things that really stood out to me was the instructional coaches and the TOSA program. and that had a $1.7 million price tag on it. So with the secondary cuts, it looks like $285,000 is going to be cut, which leaves $1.4 million left. And I just think that program should bear some of the fair share of the pain. I believe in the professionalism of our elementary school teachers. I think there's still going to be, according to the January 15th, it was $900,000 in professional development with a $50,000 cut. That's still a lot of money for professional development. I think the principals, the elementary school principals, could be instructional coaches, and I'm sure they already are, but even more so. So that would be a suggestion. And I agree, if you dismantle something, it never comes back. I look at all those string instruments that were in the high school forever. You know, it doesn't come back. Also, it seems like we're opening another preschool on our elementary school campus, and I just wonder if this is not the time to get into the preschool business, just because we have limited resources. There's Head Start. There are other programs that parent participation, perhaps, in some way. And then the final thing is, you talked about a community survey concerning the budget process, and I never did see that come out, because I still feel that people aren't knowing about it. And I would love to see the teachers get to respond one-on-one. And then the final thing I would say is the busing. Cutting the busing, I don't understand how the high school students from Los Osos are going to get to Morro Bay High, some of them. I mean, truly, you can't ride a bike and you can't walk. And with the driver's license laws, it seems impossible. No one's brought that up, maybe because that's so new. It's the first I read of it on Friday. So, I really wish you'd consider some cuts in the TOSA program, because $1.7 million, and we have an excellent staff, and I think they could find a way to make, you know, professional development happen. Thank you.
I'm Kylie. I go to C.L. Smith. I'm in fifth grade, and my teacher is Miss Patton. I heard that you may be going to cut counseling, and I think we should keep our counselors, because to some kids, counselors mean a lot. Like to me, I love having counselors because I think they are really helpful, and I know a lot of other kids think that too. They help our school by helping kids not to bully. They help kids to solve problems, like if you're not getting along with other kids. They help kids when they do groups by helping them to branch out and make more friends. They help you to learn how to make good choices. Please keep our counselors. They are very important to our school district. I can't imagine what it would be like without them. Really, I can't. It's too horrible. We really need our counselors.
Thank you. Okay, apparently that's all the requests to speak. I want to thank you for your input and for coming out on a work night like this. And I particularly want to acknowledge the spirit with which you gave us your comments and your appreciation for the difficulty of what we face. Thank you very much for that. And I also want to thank the children for coming and speaking to us. It's always the hardest part to hear, but it's always the part that means the most. And it's great to see Jill again. I'm very familiar with C.L. Smith and the wonderful things that happened out there and happened now. We're going to bring it back to the board so the board members will have a chance to discuss the recommendations. And thank you. I have a request for a brief timeout. Hi, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to continue the meeting. Thank you.
And we'll bring it to the board for discussion on item
particulate matter filters, right. And so they're not at all compliant. And so I will guess for you that maybe there's a $5,000 per bus value on those kinds of buses.
Okay, thank you. Anybody want to start off? Ellen, go right ahead.
I have a question. I have a few, but I'm going to sort of try and do these one at a time so I can keep myself organized. I really want to thank everyone who spoke. It's very important for us to be able to hear what you have to say, and I appreciate the manner in which comments were made. I have a question about fair share and the amount of money that we've lost. And I'm assuming we're not the only community-funded district that has lost, that has had money stolen.
That's correct.
Has anyone, and I don't know what the agreements look like or how all this comes about, but has anyone talked about suing the state to get our money back?
It's happened before, and actually, I feel that we have two rights of action against the state. Suing the state is a very difficult process and extremely expensive, but their non-payment of our mandated costs, as Dr. Prater alluded to, is now accumulated to the $8.8 million level. I would feel that it's totally illegal, and it has been found in Superior Court in Sacramento to be a process that the courts have said you must stop this, and they haven't. So a right of action on mandated costs has, to me, in a non-legal evaluation, I'm not qualified to do this, but it certainly has an element of success to it based upon past events. Their ability to steal money from us, if you will, is grounded in the Prop 98 suspension law. Prop 98 was passed by the citizens of California, but it had a clause in it that allowed them under certain conditions to suspend different parts of it. And while a revenue limit is a real clear-cut case that they're acting within the law, basic aid districts are a whole different animal because we don't receive anything beyond the basic allocation that gives us our name of $120 per student from the state besides the categorical programs. And as long as the categorical programs were restricted and the uses were restricted, I think that they didn't have any right whatsoever. But once they took the designator of restricted off, then you get into a gray area. Are they within their rights to limit the allocations to basic aid districts? And basic aid districts have dealt with this for the last 5 years in various serious conversations because the general feeling was, nah, they didn't have that right. But at the same time, how could a basic aid district argue about an allocation that was one-third the amount missing that a revenue limit district was suffering from when we were already receiving a per-child allocation that was considerably higher than a revenue limit district? So it's almost like being a have district, how could we argue against losing something that was even less proportionate than what a revenue limit district was receiving? Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. The Robles Wong versus State of California lawsuit was rejected by the courts in Alameda and I believe the appellate court as well. That particular lawsuit was based on a constitutional issue that California in the Constitution guaranteed a right to an appropriate education for students and that we underfunded all students in California, and that's been rejected so far by the courts. The governor, last year, tried and was successful in court again, working on what the allocation of Prop 98 actually would be. That was a lawsuit that was lost as well, and it was actually resolved by the passage of Prop 30. I think thinking about what Russell said, I think part of an issue for us is people can't forget that we're a low-wealth basic aid school district, and that one of the reasons we're a basic aid school district is because our revenue limit is so darn low. What is it? What are we, 10th out of 11 in San Luis Obispo County?
Yes.
You know, our basic aid status is still lower than most every place else in the United States outside of California. Yeah, we're doing better than that, but we're not a coast. We're not a Cambria that's getting $12,000 per student. We're not a Cayucas that gets about $10,000 or $11,000 per student.
They seem like such a strange and convoluted and complicated dance we do as the community funded district with the powers that be in Sacramento with our feel the sense that we should stay under the radar a little bit, not draw too much attention to ourselves, and it's sort of a choice to then be a little purposefully have less of a voice, and does that serve us in the long run? And I understand it's very complicated, and I agree. Yeah. I think I've said before, if I lived in a district that was not community funded, I would be crying foul that
I'm not so sure that there's a value these days in staying under the radar, because I don't believe that we are under the radar anymore. The concept and the conversation has included us so many times that people understand that we are unique and different in a positive way for us and a negative way for them, comparatively speaking. So, When they first suspended Prop 98 in it was 1998, I think, was the first suspension of Prop 98. I was part of CASBO's legislative committee at the time, and we discussed the strategy of allowing that to happen. And I was opposed to it in the sense that it's like what some of the speakers spoke about. Once you start down this road, it's an easy road to keep going down. If we don't defend ourselves at some point, we will continue to be a target. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question more directly, I think that it's okay for us to take up the mantle of righteousness, if you will, and protect ourselves. It's not going to be popular with some other districts. It's not going to be popular at the state level, but it is a concept that maybe we should develop a little further, especially on the mandated cost side. There's just absolutely no excuse for what they're doing on that one, requiring and demanding that we do things and then paying us a sum total statewide of $1,000 for these multi-million-dollar mandated costs is unconscionable. So, there's some value to what you're talking about. It's a very complicated issue, though.
Thank you.
Jackson, we're going to go to you. If you could just let me ask a quick follow-up for Russell. So one of the speakers earlier talked about counselors and reimbursable costs and those things. Is that the mandated cost?
No, that's a different kind of a mandated cost. It's MA, and we do special referrals. We don't do special. We do referrals for which we're reimbursed the time and effort that we put into that. On a you establish a standard, and then they progress through the year on that standard.
Are we actually collecting that reimbursement?
Yes. What I would say to you about the $100,000 is that it's true. The counselors create $100,000 worth of MA money, and we accumulate, I think it's close to $400,000 a year in MA money. But it's a service that if the counselors didn't do it, more than likely, not 100%, but more than likely, most of those services would be rendered by school site secretaries, teachers, principals, other people on the campus that would refer that family in need to the service for which we would get a reimbursement. Okay. It's not a service that we would just ignore. That's not our purpose nor our mission. So we know what we need to do. We do it. Right now, it's pegged to the counselors to do.
Okay. Thanks, Catherine. It took a little longer than I thought.
No, thank you. That was actually one of my questions, too. And the other question I have is about how we currently fund our counselors' salaries. And I understood Dr. Prater to say earlier that the sites pay 25% of our counselors' salaries. Is that correct? So if we were talking reduction as opposed to elimination, theoretically there could be a scenario where
instead of 100% of a counselor's time, a school site could opt to use their site funds, which are now going back to them, and they'll have more site funds, for that purpose. They could choose to just keep a 25% counselor on board. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it doesn't, you know, the thing is if you have a 25% counselor, and let's say that their base salary is $100,000 and they're 25% FTE, that's a salary due to the counselor of $25,000. I'm only establishing numbers that I can multiply from, okay? It's not the reality. So it's a salary and benefit piece, and if a base counselor is getting $100,000 for a full-time equivalent and the employment is 25%, they would get a salary of salary and benefits of $25,000. Under the model that we currently use, 75% of that $25,000 is absorbed by the district, and 25% of that $25,000.
Just got to get that off my chest. As we look at this budget, and as we look at the budget reductions, and as we look at the counselors, is there anything that's going on that the district is going to do that to work with children and have something in place? Is there something there? Is there
what we have in mind is very similar to what we've done with the summer school and the bus transportation issues, is that as we go forward, we look for alternatives to make sure that our kids in crisis are cared for. There is no intent to allow them to fall through the cracks and disappear from existence. So those are the kids that need our services. What we have to do is create the partnerships and the understandings with our teachers and our principals and agencies that would help us to address the needs of those kids. So the answer to your question is we recognize what's going to happen. We are very, very hopeful that we are going to be able to create solutions with other agencies and within our own agency to be able to address those kids in a different way.
I'm just hoping that there's some discussion. I've got other questions, so Mr. Millar, if there's others, I'll just wait and then just come back. Okay. If we're looking at the transportation, and it's been the issue's been raised about the kids in Los Osos, are we looking at those needs and
yes,
there's some ways to address that?
We're hopeful. We don't have a solution in place. We have no agreements. Part of our problem is that we need to have an outcome to the recommendations so that we can go forward and create contracts and solutions. It would not behoove us to create a contract with a transportation department of the county and then find out we're not going to do the recommendations. So we would end up with having our own people in place and a contract that we would be responsible for. So what we need to do is make sure we don't put the cart before the horse here. But I will tell you that our solution is to work with the county transportation department. They do not have a bus route that runs along Los Osos Valley Road from Los Osos. It doesn't exist. I'm not sure why, but it would be my interest to work with them to give them the number of riders they can expect to get, the number of outcomes, and see if it doesn't meet their basic criteria to establish a route. And we're doing that right now. We're creating lists of students who live in Los Osos, go to Morro Bay High School, live in Los Osos, come to Pacific Beach High School, and seeing how that pattern and number translates to the county's model. I'm not sure how it'll work, but I'm hopeful.
Okay. So in talking with some of the staff and looking at the second interim, there's still within our budget, evidently, conference and travel money, and I'm hearing numbers between $120,000 to $200,000. It's my understanding in the past when we faced budget issues that we've looked at that very carefully. Is that a way to find some money?
I think that what you're referring to exists in two different forms. One would be in professional development and making sure that those areas that we would like our teachers to become proficient at, that include a professional development, we have an opportunity to send them there. The other one would be, I'm imagining, I'm not quite sure what you're speaking of then, is the tonight we had the Skills USA outcomes. And while they were very, very exciting, they're going to become very, very expensive because we're going to send our honored students to receive their awards. And that's where the budget is to be able to afford that. So it's not reasonable to assume that the school sites are going to be able to afford that. And that falls upon the district if we wish to honor them. In our culture, in our school district, we have had a lot of resources, and we haven't had the need to limit our thinking along those lines. I'm here to tell you, those days are done. They ended 3 months ago. We do need to create a new culture. I don't know if it will include the inability to honor students such as the Skills USA people, but it will require a conversation about those kinds of expenditures in the future, because we can't afford to do that. We can't afford to lay off the valued elementary counselors and then still send people on trips to New York to learn how to do what is something that's basic. Well, we could teach them with TOSAs and instructional coaches. So,
unfortunately, we need to reduce that ratio that we have between our benefits, our salaries and benefits, and the total revenues that we have. And I don't think we can ever forget that piece.
Thank you.
That said, I do, though, have to really wonder what's going to happen to kids with mental health needs. As everybody knows on this board and probably in this audience, I manage a program for kids with mental health problems, mental health needs. In fact, it's our dream that we're going to be able to establish another program for elementary school kids with these extreme needs. I'm seeing more and more kids in this county at younger and younger ages with unbelievable mental health difficulties. So much so that, again, that we're on a county level considering opening up a program for young students. Barring that, we're probably going to have to see those kids go out of county, which means out of state. And that's not an outcome that anybody wants to see. I appreciated, Jill, your insights and your history, and I got the same information from Carol Locher as well. And I just want to acknowledge Carol today. And she reminded me that historically, when we first got on the board, that unfortunately we had the reduced, you know, we had the reduced counselors. I think we had counselors when I don't know that other people had counselors. We were able to beef it up when we had the money. And I appreciate folks saying, well, are there other alternatives for kids to get those kinds of mental health needs met that I believe our kids have? I want to commend the people from C.L. Smith about the cultural sensitivity of having a Spanish-speaking counselor, because I think that really does make a difference. But I do believe that we need to look at an alternative method, and what I haven't heard is an alternative method for providing support to kids with mental health needs. What I've heard is eliminate, and I think the question really is there room for, and I'm sorry, you guys, but I'm going to use the R word, is there room for reduction to try to maintain mental health services for kids, because elimination is such an ugly, dirty word, and I do believe that it means it's not coming back.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, please.
I think that what you're hitting upon is an alternative we've looked at many, many hours worth of discussions, and that is, you know, reduction and not elimination. It's something that we continue to butt up against because of the 92% need to go, and how do we find alternatives? Mm-hmm. If we bring back a counselor, guys, it's a 2-to-1 deal for a teacher to be released. So one counselor is equal to two young, inexperienced teachers in terms of salary and dollars. And that becomes a class size issue. That's one of the reasons why the recommendation from us involved elementary counselors as opposed to reducing teachers, is because the cost, the dollar amount, in terms of people, was 2-to-1. In terms of the alternative, We've had many hours of discussion. We've had many, many different ideas. But once again, we're running, we can only go so far, either legally or even practically, until we know what's going to happen. If we contract for a service with somebody or something out there, and then we find out that we have not the number of reductions we thought, then we don't need that much of a service. How do we get out of it? Okay. So what we're looking for, just so you know, first of all, understand, we got it. We know. We understand. We're working on it. But we can't make a solid conclusion until we know what's going to happen. And so we're waiting. And then as we wait, we have, and one of the reasons this thing is being pushed is not only the human cost and the ability for people to understand what's going to happen to them, but also for us to be able to institute the alternatives. And we need a couple of months to be able to make those negotiations happen.
Right. I get all that, but I still feel like I'm being, and I understand all the things you're saying, and I agree with them. And again, I want to reiterate, I get 85, I get the number, I get the 4.6.
I know.
But I think we're being asked to eliminate a program, understanding the 2-for-1 ratio you're talking about, without an alternative for support that I'm comfortable with. What I'm hearing you say, Russell, is we'll figure it out, but I need to know what you're going to figure out.
Because I'm
afraid that we're going to have a bunch of kids in need that aren't going to get served. I just need to say that. And that's my concern, and I think, for me, that's a huge issue.
I agree. Okay? If I'm sitting in your chair,
I feel like I'm being asked to jump out of an airplane not knowing whether my parachute's there or not. And I'd like to know that my parachute's there because I want to survive.
Okay. And I get what you're saying. So here's what I want to offer you as an alternative is that over the next 2 weeks, okay, let us have an opportunity to outline program.
And I'm absolutely not asking for any commitment tonight, but I wanted to share my concern. The other thing, and I'm glad you expressed it, is the busing to get kids to Morrilby High School.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the doubling of the transportation costs, but I think, as we learned before, that's a proverbial drop in the bucket.
Yeah,
I think what did we get when we cut, when we charged
the dollar? We're projecting to get $50,000 from this doubling, which we're getting $100,000. We figure we're going to lose some customers, so we're calculating maybe an additional 50.
Yeah, we're really not talking about a lot of money.
No.
Although I must say that I am absolutely in favor of charging parents for transportation. I think that is a great service that we offer and provide safety, and is cheaper than driving their kids to school. And I know there are probably people that aren't going to agree with me on that, but it's what I think it's true anyway. But I do think we need to, again, in that same vein, I need to be assured that kids in low social, especially then again, we're talking about kids in poverty. We just talked about Baywood School, 25% of the kids going into preschool, going into kindergarten, don't have preschool. I'm imagining those are mostly low SES kids, Spanish speaking kids, kids whose parents are probably working their tails off, getting up, going to the fields at 6 o'clock in the morning and work until 6 o'clock at night. We've got to make sure that we got a way of getting those kids to school so they can take care of all the rest of that. So I would like to know more about what that looks like too.
Unmistakably, the children that will take advantage of transportation and won't have it are those that are in poverty.
Yeah.
And it is a very big concern of ours. We've talked about it many, many hours. It's something that we're struggling to work with other agencies to solve. And within the next 3 years, you guys, transportation is going to be a self-funded model or it'll cease to exist. Because even now, the state of California in its recent bills is eliminating all funding for home to school. Whether it passes, and I don't think it will this year, but when it does, and it will, because they can't afford to keep funding it, and neither can we, it'll be a self-funded model, very similar to, food services.
Right. It'll be an enterprise fund of some sort or another. I'm fully aware that Templeton eliminated all busing for students except for special education students, and Templeton School District is a really rural school district.
Yeah. And what they found is that parents are are entering into free enterprise by providing busing services to their friends for a fee.
Yeah.
That's one of the ways.
It's called carpooling, I think.
It's either carpooling or actually a business that some people have gotten into now. It's a very strange thing. Cottage industry at its best.
And finally, I just want to close with, it really heartened me to hear that we went from near dead last to the 58%. I don't think it's good enough, but it shows that we've taken the achievement gap seriously and that we're working hard to close it. And I want to thank everybody that's involved in that, because that is key to the success for all of our students.
It is.
Jim, and then Marilyn, then Ella.
Well, I want to thank the folks that have come to the podium to speak to us. I'm always impressed by their concern, their eloquence, and their elegance. I have a couple of questions. One, some concerns have been raised about the process, the budget process, that perhaps some of the meetings are more informational than, let's say, a discussional or a dialogue. So I'd like either Rick or Russell to respond to that if they'd like. And I have another question, but I'll wait on that.
Well, let me start. My stuff was truly informational. So when I went out to school sites to kind of lay out the presentation about what the structural deficit is, we called it a primer on our budget scenario. It was very informational. I hung around as long as anyone wanted to discuss things and talk about it, but it wasn't a format that was designed to say, let's get responses and ideas and a free flow of information. So to be clear, what I did at all of our school sites was truly informational.
And I have two stages of this process to talk about. One is what's happened and what's going to happen. And what we tried to do was to have a non-exclusive special interest meeting with different identified groups, and there were eight of them. And during that time, nobody was excluded. Everybody could come, any stakeholders, if you will, in that particular meeting. Other people attended, but mostly as an audience and not participatory. And it was that final umbrella team that was to construct the recommendations for submission to the superintendent. I never heard that anybody felt frustrated. I never heard that anybody felt left out. It's possible. But it wasn't because I didn't let them speak or they didn't get an opportunity. It was maybe that they didn't feel comfortable. Because let's be honest, okay, there were very focused recommendations that were being discussed in terms of layoff. Due to the law, we had to make our recommendations for that prior to March 15th, which was prior to the start of this. So we already had a base, a foundation of layoff recommendations. And we discussed those more than we discussed the non-employee reductions that came later. But during the process of these meetings, the one question I consistently asked and was consistently not answered was, if not this, then what? And while Mrs. Francis gave some indication of alternatives, such as what we do, you won't get anymore with the mom money, or those kinds of things, tonight was the first time that were solid recommendations such as cut instructional coaches, cut professional development, those kinds of things. I had heard those, but mostly in the blog and the emails that we set up for people to submit their ideas who didn't want to participate in the group. So we had the groups, we had a blog, we had emails, we had pathways for communication. And then the one thing we haven't done yet, and it's only because I can't quite wrap my head around it. I think I've got it now, but it's the SurveyMonkey. And I feel that in the next 2 weeks, we're going to get one out that will give us the opportunity to discuss results. And as somebody said, they wish that that would have happened, because it is an opportunity for everybody to participate on a one-on-one basis. And I agree. and it's all mine, okay? I own this one, that it didn't happen yet, but I promise you it will happen. And hopefully we'll be ready this week. So that I'm getting to the point where I'm more comfortable now.
Thank you. My last question is just really more about what people have mentioned, the instructional coaches and professional development. About what do we have allocated in the budget now for professional development if these cuts were made?
Okay, we started the year with about $900,000. During the $2 million reduction, I think we cut about $300,000 from it. So now we're down to $600,000. And I think that with the superintendent's reductions and other things that we're going to do internally, there's probably another $100,000 to $150,000 to bring that down to around $450,000 to $500,000. Now, you have to be flexible with me on this one, because first I'm speaking not with anything in front of me, and my memory is getting old and polluted. But the other thing is that some of this stuff hasn't been studied to determine the effect on our initiatives and our outcomes if we do cut it. It's going to The issue of professional development for me has always been like, this is something that doesn't have an outcome that's measurable. But within the initiatives and within the model that we've constructed, professional development now has a very defined outcome. And it's very, very necessary to continue the success that we're getting with instructional coaches and with our young teachers and teachers in need. So professional development is sort of an opaque expenditure, but it's beginning to clarify for me, at least, and if it gets clear for me, it should be clear for other people too, that this is almost a necessary component of success for the initiatives, and the success we're seeing in our narrowing of the achievement gap is I think prevalent. It can be traced back to professional development, TOSIS, and instructional coaches. I believe that sincerely.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you. Many of my questions have been asked and answered, but I would start by saying that I'm not in denial about the amount of money that we have to find. And the fact that our district, the face of our district is changing and will have to continue to change in response to the times we live in, the economic times we live in. So, sadly, many of the things that defined us, I think, as a district, we'll find. Peter, you could respond to where the administrative cuts have been last year and this year?
Like you, Mrs. Roger, I was not approached in Trader Joe's, but at the coffee grinder place at Costco. And that was
I've been there too.
that was a difficult conversation as well. So our administrative team has adjusted and adapted to the strategic initiatives by necessity. But soon after we adopted those initiatives, I realized that we were facing some challenges. And so if you look at what we've done as the board confronted the budget first phase of the budget reduction last year, one of the things that went unnoticed by most people, but not by our team by any stretch, was the fact that we laid off two district full-time administrators last year in the budget reduction. And the way we did that was we had, in 2011-12, we had sort of our administrative team sort of reflected a district that had largesse, had grown to be a district with lots of resources. And so managing that was tricky. So in 11-12, we had a director and a coordinator of adult education. Well, that's when the state started decimating, well, part of our fair share was the total elimination of adult school funding. And so we had a director and a coordinator of adult education. So that's two FTE. We had a full-time principal at Pacific Beach High School, We had a director and a coordinator of student support services, two FTE. So within, in 11-12, we had five FTE just in those three areas. After last year's budget reduction, that went from five to three. And no one noticed. No one noticed, well, except internally. So now what happened was because this is just what educators do, we kept plugging along doing the work with just a little more weight on our shoulders, and we spread it out. So we reduced two FTE last in the budget reduction of last year, and it went largely unnoticed, like I said, by most people. Then this year, as part of my recommendation, which is is coming with its own degree of challenge for sure, is the reduction of Director of Instructional IS&T, Instructional Support and Technology, and combining that with the Director of Secondary Instruction. So I'm taking two full-time district-level positions with quite robust job requirements, and I'm forging it into one job. That's $120,000 savings. So over last year and this year, if the board accepts my recommendations, that's a 3 FTE reduction with an annual savings of $360,000. And yet, if you look at our initiatives and if you look at what I've put up there as areas of high focus, we're like everyone else in public education. We're going to be running on fumes. And yet we'll still do it with a smile on our face. So when you go back to the school, the fiscal analysis report that was done by school services, I did that deliberately. I requested that study deliberately because I wanted to know where we were in relation to other districts, not community-funded districts, but other districts, unified districts, revenue limit, or basic aid. And what that comparative analysis told us was that because of, what it says was that San Luis Coastal is above average in certificated employees, above average in classified employees, above average in site administration. And the only reason, even though if you look at our sites, you wouldn't think that, but the only reason that's true is because we have a hidden secret in our district, a hidden intervention secret, which I think is the most powerful thing about our district, and that is we have small schools. The average size of our elementary schools in the district is about 425, 430 students, the average size. That's a remarkable thing when you look at most of California where you see elementary schools because of the economies of scale. They've jacked up elementary schools to 800,000-900,000 students. Our district is special in that regard, and I hope no one loses sight of that. Level administration, we were below average. The only segment in our district was below average. Everybody else is above average in terms of staffing. I've just reduced three FTE. Well, if you approve my recommendation, that's three FTE reductions beyond that study. So we're running into some risky territory if we keep going in that direction. And I'm not being selfish about it. I really am not. I just know how hard these people work and my expectations on them and of them and of that they have on themselves. So there is an economy of scale here. And I think we're reaching maximum economy at this point, I think, because we have so much work to do still. That's so critically important to achieve our goals. And so I feel awful about this recommendation as I do of all of them, just as bad as I do for all of them. And that is, these two people work on weekends, work late in the night, early in the morning. They're calling me. And now I'm combining two into one because it's something we need to do. And so with that, I hope that answers your question.
It does answer my question. Thank you very much. I just have a couple of others. Please bear with me. I wouldn't feel right if I didn't mention that we've had a lot of discussion tonight about counseling and certificated librarian cuts, and really very little mention of the cuts that are also being proposed tonight, and that's to our classified ranks. It's tragic what's happening to our transportation department. 8 bus drivers. These are people who are heads of household who make probably $40,000 a year. And for them, these cuts are devastating as well. And I want to mention that. And I'm very sorry that this is being proposed. The SRO positions at the high schools, we've had them. We've not had them. We have them currently. The budget team that Mr. Miller oversaw recommended that they be cut. If I understand correctly, we're paying 75% of their 2 salaries at $120,000 a year for San Luis Obispo and $80,000 a year for Morro Bay. We have them 4 days a week, and we don't have exclusive rights to them. Is that correct?
Correct.
So in the current proposal, we're looking at retaining them half-time. Well, 50.
Actually, what the...
Where am I looking? We're looking at keeping them half-time, so
no,
it would be losing 100,000.
No, actually what we want to do is negotiate with the cities to provide the same services for half the cost. That is our goal. So we would look to keep them 4 days a week, not exclusive, for half of our current cost. I don't know where that's going to go, but that's our position at the moment in our discussions.
Okay, it's my feeling, and my feeling alone, that if we're not successful in that negotiation, I would favor eliminating those two positions, because I think that elementary counselors provide a greater benefit to students in danger than an SRO on a campus by the time they get down out of the administrative offices into where something could possibly be happening on a campus. You've already suffered
that's good to know.
Loss. So for me, that's where I would go with it. And professional development, I do think we need cuts in professional development. I understand that the teachers, when asked and when we negotiate with them, that it's very important to them. It's something that they want to have, and contractually we're obligated to a certain amount of it. But I would favor looking at professional development, including the California School Boards Association conference that we attend as our own professional development each year. I think when things are this tight and we're looking at getting rid of 43 employees, I have a very hard time looking employees in the eye and saying that I'm going for a 3-day conference. So we've received a lot of professional development over the years. We might look at suspending that for a year. And I would ask Dr. Prater to please go back to the drawing board and try to come up with some kind of a plan that would allow us to keep some form of elementary counseling. I know it can't look like it looks now. I do understand that. But to keep it, perhaps if it were just 2 counselors,
whatever they might be able to afford. You know, Jill was talking about when she worked for 12 hours a week or, you know, at a site, but piecing something together, not paying. You know, I think that I do think it's realistic to assume that the days of a full-time counselor at these sites are, for the time being at least, that's unrealistic. But piecing something together between the district and then the site contribution is worth exploring.
Okay, and to explain the. The issue, there's 9 employees occupying 8 FTEs, which are full-time equivalents.
Right.
So in my example, to be a little more clear about it, would be that in order to restore the 8 FTE, it would all It would calculate approximately to 16 or so beginning teacher salaries.
Okay. Yeah, and we can't do. I'm not saying that we can do what we can keep what we have now.
I understand.
That's unsustainable. I agree completely. You know, I've watched over the years. I saw our personnel budget get to where it was considered, you know, a healthy percentage, and then it's crept up, and I agree, it's not prudent to continue on this track. We have to make some changes, and I think everyone realizes that, but I also think that there's a value here. And I also wanted to clarify, Lindley was talking about at Steele Smith making a trade in human capital sort of between the school. It's my understanding that school individual sites are not able to really make
correct
decisions like that. Those are suggestions and thoughts that are well worth considering and hearing, and it certainly helps us understand where they're placing their site priorities, and that's crucial to help us do our jobs. But those are not site decisions.
Correct. Very generous offer, but it requires
a
district-wide.
Unless you're the music teacher.
It's a very good offer, but not capable of being carried out.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll come to you in a minute, sir. The I could support the idea of zeroing out school resource officers in an effort to preserve some counseling FTE. I also am pessimistic about the likely negotiations that we have yet to embark on. If I could get a hopefully concise answer, I keep getting, why aren't we doing furlough days? Why aren't we? So, take
it away. Two reasons. One of which, it requires negotiations, and it hasn't been a topic that we can bring to the table at this point without the various bargaining units participating. Furlough days isn't a subject we would avoid. But we would have to realize what we're getting with the furlough days is a temporary solution to a budget problem that's permanent. I want to clarify something that Ellen brought up, and she's absolutely right that we have to deal with this issue of percentages, but it isn't something we did to ourselves. We were operating for years within our budget, within our revenues. When they took $4.5 million, $11 million from us, they created a new paradigm for us. We felt it was a temporary reduction, my bad, and we did not solve the problem when it happened. We bridged through it using $8 million of money in order to keep the people in place. Now that it's permanent, we have an issue to solve. And whether it includes furlough days or not is a matter for negotiations. And if we can get to the table with the different bargaining units between now and implementation of the reductions in force notices that would happen June 30th, let us say, then there might be a solution there. But our problem is going to be how are we going to address it, not just for this year, but into the future. Because the money that we're creating in terms of layoffs is going to go to solve a deficit. But it also is going to go to creating a organization that's going to be able to respond. So if we have furlough days, at some point, in most models, those furlough days are reinstated and the pay is reinstated. When we do...
So it isn't your bad on the bridging financing. It's our strategic decision, and the game changed on us. I think it was a good decision by the board and a good recommendation by staff when we did it. And it basically was a testimony to how much we value our employees and how much we understand the disruption of having to lose them, some of them, which makes this all the more difficult. I'm hesitant to bring this up because I don't know the level of work involved. I feel a need to at least have an understanding of what a incremental increase in class size would look like as far as dollar savings, but before we embark on that, would that actually impact the percentage of budget?
Good question, and I think the answer you're looking for is what if we eliminated some teaching positions throughout the district? What would be the savings by creating a staffing formula that had a higher class size? So right now we staff to 25 to 1, 28 and a half to 1, et cetera. And so if we increase that by, let's say, two students, what would be the savings in staffing for that? And the problem for that, at least for this year in addressing the problem, is it's too late to eliminate employees from those positions. So we're pretty much, barring a large increase in retirements or some other type of action on an individual basis, barring those things, we're going to be recalling all of the present teachers that aren't retiring for next year. Okay. And have no recourse about what to do.
So unless attrition were to take care of that, yes, class size increase, it would not help us.
But I think it's an excellent question, and one in which you guys should start to familiarize yourself with, because not only are we having this discussion this year, but because of increasing costs for next year's budget, you're going to probably have the same kind of discussion, maybe different though, about different employee positions that might need to be eliminated in in the next budget year, 14-15.
Thank you, Mark.
Oh, thank you, Walter. So I'm noticing as we get down into this, and I'm hearing some great, thank you very much, Marilyn, for mentioning CSEA. I think that was really important. As I'm looking at some of these proposed cuts, we're down into the $30,000 and $50,000 range. And I guess I'm wondering if there's other amounts of money, you know, that quantity or greater that we could possibly find. So I asked some questions. One of the items that the district has is an $850,000 a year water bill, and I'm wondering if we could use recycled or treated water at some of our sites as we do at Laguna. And so rather than just putting really high quality water and watching it get sucked into the ground, is there a way to get some savings out of that $850,000?
There would be two issues with that. Both would involve some investment. One, a large investment. The other, not so large. And as you advanced your idea, you talked about water trucks for delivery of that. And so there's an investment there in time, at least, even if we can find the equipment for free. The other way of doing it is, as we do at Laguna, we've installed a sprinkler system that's dedicated to tertiary treated. It's called a purple line. And the installation of that isn't necessarily cheap. But the water does come to us at a reduced rate. Not as significant as you would expect for what is treated water. You would kind of think it would have a far reduced price tag, but it's an amazingly expensive commodity. So I could bring you back some studies on that. We did a really good work on Laguna when we did it, and I could take that and extrapolate it.
Okay. And it's my understanding that the city of San Luis does make tertiary water available for construction. That there's a pump down there, and you can take as much as you want of it.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but yes.
So
yeah,
it may be something worth looking at. The other thing is
Mark, could I ask a question that sort of dovetails in with that one? In Los Osos, when we lost our tiered water rate, and we began to water on a less frequent basis, are we still doing that? I noticed the fields look pretty poor.
Yeah.
And would there be significant savings in cutting it back even further, or would the turf be unsuitable for kids?
The turf would become unsuitable. Right now we're doing the minimum amount of water in the play areas, and we haven't watered anything on the exterior. So if you took a look at the Los Osos Middle School field.
I've seen it.
You see a small...
Okay. I just... it just seems like if we're not going to do it this year, then possibly we ought to start looking at it for next year, because
I think
it's a significant amount of money.
It's a negotiation item, and the truth of the negotiations is about what to set the standard at. So, you know, 10 retirements doesn't gain us a savings because there's a certain amount of cost involved that we have to capture.
Right.
And so then you try and measure at what level of retirements are we breaking even or getting something. And obviously this year with the 39, we got something. If we set our level at 25 or 20 or 30, then it would be a lesser amount. So we would have to calculate that.
My understanding was you had a number of potential people that would qualify.
We'd have to negotiate it.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to briefly revisit the furlough day question. I know I spoke with you briefly about it earlier today, but then in thinking about it and then listening to you answer Walt's question, I think that it seems that it would be, considering furlough days would be my nemesis, which would be as though it were one-time money.
It can be.
Because
but
if
what
we
you
reinstated,
buy,
then we'd be back where we...
Yeah.
We'd buy...
buy with furlough days is time. And sometimes what you need to solve your problem is time. So what you get in a furlough day situation is, if it's a three-year agreement, during that 3 years, certain retirements take effect. And what you gain during that time is a savings in retirements that you don't replace. And so that's just one option with time. If we don't have that kind of an outcome and it's not clearly stated, then the furlough day is just a temporary solution to what is really a basic deficit issue that we have. You have to be very careful about furlough days. I think the districts are finding that as they come to the realization that their furloughs save them for the moment, but you're still seeing districts that haven't had a cut in the last 2 years laying people off. And the reason is the reinstatement of furlough, the elimination of the furlough days, causes them to reconfront the problem all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something we have to be careful about. It's not a nemesis at all. It's a good idea. A lot of districts have done it. It's just how we're going to manage it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or board discussion? Okay, we'll close this agenda item. Have we given you guys enough to think about? Okay. And so we'll return to item 6 on the agenda, which is official correspondence. We received a significant amount of correspondence regarding both counseling recommendation and librarian recommendation, among others. All of those letters and emails were provided to the board members, and I can assure you the board members read them all. Because we do. And we'll move on to item 7.01. Mr. Miller, do you actually have anything to contribute additionally to
the only thing I got was
that's the wrong answer.
On a completely different subject about what the state is doing, and I've lost my note, but essentially what it is there's been an alternative bill submitted and passed out of committee that has a funding formula for school districts. It's different than the funding model that the governor has proposed. And it's Senator Liu, and she has created a funding model that has expected outcomes and accountability as its centerpiece. And enough people are interested in it that they were passed it out of committee so it could have more universal debate and discussion. And so I just want to alert you that as we approach the end of this legislative session and what's going to happen, there are competing bills now for the funding formula. Does it mean anything different for us? Not necessarily. But it is there as a vehicle that maybe they don't do something to us that's horrible. Nobody ever really wins the fight with the governor. You have to create a compromise or a partnership with him if you want something. But there has been an awful lot of discussion about two-thirds of the districts in the state will be worse off with his funding model than without it. One-third will be better off. 50% of the students represented in the state will be better off, and 50% won't be. It's not exactly a well-balanced and thoughtful model, but he's the governor, and I have learned over 25 years that the governor's proposals in January generally take effect in June, and it's very hard to argue against him.
Every year. And in our policy, we say we're going to take the time to evaluate our implementation of this policy. So I'm going to share some quick slides with you regarding the survey that we conducted this year to get some feedback. It was a voluntary survey, and we did this in March, sent out a Survey Monkey. These are the people who participated, 24 aides, 22 clerical, and you can read all the numbers there for a total of 198 people in our district school staff who participated. And so what you have are the results, and I've provided you with the wording so you could look at it afterwards if you wanted to in more detail. So in terms of staff being familiar with our wellness policy, pretty good results. 78% say, yes, we know you exist, and yes, we know you care about what our kids are eating and that there is a policy regarding that. In terms of the laws about food sales, 66% said they have some knowledge or are very familiar. We wanted to know, so how many times are we using food as a treat? 50% said never, and 25% said once a year. So again, you know, we've made some impact here. We're not using food as treats very often. Of those that are providing those treats to students, the teachers, probably about half of them, know what the federal requirements are and they're meeting them. But we've got a significant amount who don't know, and so that's something that caught the attention of our wellness committee, and you could see the percentages for aides and clerical. In terms of knowing where to get this information, we've provided information, but it looks like we need to do a better job there in people knowing where in their school they can find this information. We wanted to look at the flip side, and, you know, water is a good thing for our students to drink. It's good for their brains, and it's good for their health, and it looks like that's not a problem. We're not keeping students from doing that. We did want to look at the flip side, though, caffeinated drinks or sugary liquids. And, you know, 83% of those people said, no, we don't see that in our classrooms. Students eating in class, many of them don't. Some of them do. We want to know if our kids are hungry when they come to school, and so this was an important bit of information that, yes, our teachers and some of our clerical staff said that, yeah, you know, close to 50% or more are aware of students who come to school hungry or are hungry. And then in terms of promoting student and staff wellness, you know, how are we doing? And so, again, there we have, you know, it's about 50-50 almost. We could do more to promote wellness for both our student and staff. And so this is the final slide. I just wanted you to be aware of what we do in our wellness committee is we really try to limit adding work to our sites because we know everybody's working really hard. Okay? What we do instead is we use that meeting time to do the work to keep moving this forward. And so these were our work groups this year, and we completed that wellness survey. This that you see up here, nutrition education and before and after school programs, we've sent out a survey to those programs, and by our last meeting we'll have results. And when you compare the work groups from this year to what we're thinking about for next year, you don't see that survey, the one I just shared. I think it'd be a thing to do maybe every other year. But we are going to add this idea of staff mental and physical wellness and what we might be able to do to promote that.
Do you think the idea of what wellness means is well understood within the district, both on administered or certificated and classified employees?
Our policy defines part of it. It talks about physical wellness. It talks about emotional wellness, and then that physical part is both exercise but also what we eat. And I think we try to encompass that in some of the topics that are presented in terms of the work groups.
Okay. Good. Any questions for Dr. Dulkiskamp? Chris?
No, I just want to say that last week my wife got a call from CISC actually asking if she wanted to participate in a program, and I think there are ongoing programs that are ensuring.
It might sound okay on the surface. We serve K-12. Community college serves adults to some extent, certainly. But there is a long history of adult education being part of the K-12 system over 150 years. When you consider programs like the ones we have, we are providing services to our own families, to our own students. Our summer school program, what we will retain will be run through our adult education because they understand how to do credit recovery. We understand how to get students their GED preparation, citizenship classes, parenting classes. If you look at the cover of our current one that you probably received in your mail this last week, you see our coordinator handing a diploma to a young lady who is just receiving a high school diploma, who also has a child in our transitional kindergarten program. There's just a strong interconnection, so much so that education stakeholders throughout the state of California, including the state superintendent Tom Torlakson, the California Community College Chancellor's Office, meaning the community colleges themselves, are saying, no, we don't want this. The State Assembly Budget Committee just last week by unanimous vote rejected the governor's proposal. It's expected that within the next week the Senate Budget Subcommittee will also reject the governor's proposal. It seems as if there is no one supporting the governor's proposal, and so we are actually asking our board to join other boards of education throughout the state to send a resolution of our rejection of the governor's proposal before he does his May revise of his budget. And we have a resolution, should the board decide to adopt it, to retain adult education in K-12.
All right. Thank you. Have all the board members had an opportunity to review the resolution?
Yes.
So we can, in concern for Mrs. Holmes' wellness, I won't make her read it this time. And it's also right up here, should we have anybody. And the chair will entertain a motion regarding this resolution.
I would move to adopt resolution number 14-12-13, retaining adult education in K-12.
And I'll second that. And I just want to say that I asked Mr. Stork, or Dr. Stork, the question at the Education Summit a couple of weeks ago, and he just, it was like I threw him the pitch he wanted to hit out of the park, which was, no, we don't support it, and we really don't support it. So, yeah.
All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Unger. Roll call vote.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Millar? Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
After we've taken that action, would anybody in the public like to address this item? Oh, good. Seeing no one. We'll move on to item 9.02, approval of a new position, support services for deaf and hard of hearing students. And Dr. Kirk Martinez.
Good evening. Dr. Kirk Martinez is here, and I thank you for being here so late. This is a really difficult time to come to you to ask for you to approve a new position, and I understand that. This position I'm asking you to approve is a position that is required under special education. Let me explain why I'm here. Asking you to approve this critical position. We have sign language interpreters to sign to students who know either signing exact English or ASL. And they sign throughout the day so they can access their communication and access their curriculum throughout the day. We have this particular situation, which is relatively the same, although this is a specific transcription, and it's a transcriber, for a student who has lost his hearing as a young adolescent. He's in seventh grade. So he does not have the ability right now to sign, so we would not use an interpreter, a signing interpreter. So we have different programs. It's called real-time captioning, and the specific program software is called Typewell. It takes specific training, and it requires a specific job description, which if approved tonight for this position, the Personnel Commission would then develop the job description. It's similar to court reporting in that it's real time and the student can access all of the students' conversations in the background because there's a laptop with the transcriber typing and it's zoomed to the student's netbook. It could be on a Kindle, it can be on an iPad, and he's seeing it in real time. And usually we have students that that are born deaf or lose their hearing at a younger age, and we teach them sign language through their education. This particular situation, it was significant and he lost it within a year. And it will continue to be lost. He's also taking sign language classes so that he's able to communicate in sign language. If this was to occur again, you can utilize the same transcriber in the same classes, however, with two, three other students reading the same text.
And is it anticipated that a student using this in the circumstances you described would acquire sufficient sign language skills that eventually this accommodation wouldn't be necessary?
I can't guarantee it. It would be anticipated. However, this student, because of his high level of understanding and comprehension, it may be something that is continued. Whether it's an interpreter or a transcriber, he will need one or the other.
Okay. Great. Any board member questions?
I do have a question, Jackie. So this interpreter, when this student graduates in 6 years or so, would we have an obligation to keep this person on staff, or was this more of a contractual arrangement?
This would be our employee under this job description. So it would be my understanding if the service is no longer required for this job description, that position would go away, and I would look to Ryan for that confirmation.
Yes, it would be a layoff. If we did not need a particular kind of service, which this would be, we would need to institute a layoff.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is there anybody in the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, bring it back. Any further questions for Jackie? Okay, seeing no one, thank you. Are we taking action on this tonight? Okay, thank you. I'll make a motion to approve item 9.02.
I'll second that.
Okay, any further board discussion on this item? Motion by the chair, second by the clerk. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. And we will move on to item 9.03, the political fortunes of one Christopher Unger.
Yes.
Take it away, Chris.
I don't know how fortunate it would be, but I've I've made the decision that I'd like to run for vice president of the California School Boards Association. In order for me to do that, I need to have three nominations, and they can either be nominations from individual board members or from boards. I would ask this board to support me by nominating me for that. Thank you.
If the board supports you, does that count for three?
No.
You still have to go out and find two more?
I've got some others lined up, though. It would be nice, though, if my board would support me.
Well, I was just wondering whether you wanted to pick us off one at a time so you get to your three.
Sort of pot shots.
But if you've got it figured out, I know.
I can count the machinations.
You can.
But you know, I would welcome the board's nomination, and then I would also welcome individual nominations if people would so like to do that. Letters would be fine too.
And will you be promising to bring any money back from Sacramento?
Yes, chicken in every pot, a Ford in every garage.
Oh, Mark, go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to say that I've had the opportunity to serve with Chris on CSBA's Delegate Assembly probably, I think it's about 6 years now. About 6 years. Chris is a phenomenal representative for Region 9, which is the coast, and a phenomenal person up at CSBA. And I know that this board's probably going to more than likely, probably, maybe, support him, but I think that I will be writing a personal letter, and I would urge each member of the board to also write a personal letter of support.
How about a motion?
And I would be proud to make the motion.
All right.
Thank you.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay. Thank you,
gentlemen. Can I clarify? Because we were expecting, Mr. Unger and I were expecting the board to ask for an agenda item in the future.
Oh.
Are you taking action tonight to support that nomination, and we should prepare those documents for you?
Is there any reason we should wait on this?
We don't need to.
Okay. So we can take the action, and you'll provide a resolution or something?
There is a simple form in nomination. Hold on.
Oh, okay. So that's all the paperwork. Sorry.
May I have a question?
Sure.
Okay. So I just need to clarify that there is no cost to the – sorry, Chris, but there's no cost to the district for this. I see that you receive – there's a monthly stipend attached.
Correct.
And that covers all your
– Anybody in the public like to object to this nomination going forward? Seeing no – or even if you want to speak in – speak in support of it, too. I was just...
Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Getting a little loose up here. But anyone like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing no one, we'll move to a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Questenberry. Any further board discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And thank you, Chris, for being willing to serve, and we wish you well.
Thanks, and I appreciate the support of the board.
Okay.
And I'll make you proud.
You better. We'll move to the action consent agenda item. Let me know if you want anything pulled. Approval of certificated classified personnel items. 10.02, disposition of surplus property. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, furniture and equipment request. 10.05, approval of purchase orders. 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll. 10.07, approval of quarterly Williamson report on uniform complaint filings. 10.08, approval of international student exchange programs for 2013-2014. But these two items were on the discussion agenda at the last meeting. And that's it. Okay, any motion for items 10.01 through
I'll move approval of items 10.01 through 10.08.
I'll second.
Okay. Motion by
Mrs. Roger.
Mrs. Roger, thank you. And a second by Mr. Buckman, and a couple of coughs by Mrs. Eisendraff Rogers. And I said a couple of coughs. And so just acknowledging your suffering down there. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0, and we move on to item 11.03, advanced agenda. Does anyone want to add anything to our workload in the near future?
Are you carrying?
Okay. Seeing no one right now, we'll move on to item 12.01, ROP board report.
Okay, the ROP board report was given by the student from San Luis High School. I will just add that the ROP board is looking forward to meeting with the superintendents and a large group of others to work out towards what's going to be the future of ROP, and I understand the superintendents are meeting this Friday to discuss it. So looking forward from that. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks, Mark. And 12.02, reports by board members. This is Roger.
Yeah, just one quick thing. As we were reminded earlier this evening, but I would let the public know that Pacific Beach High School is having their open house tomorrow night between 5 and 7, and it's a barbecue. So anyone who cares to attend, that's where we'll be.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
While I have a voice, let me just say it was a pleasure to be on the panel to select the members of the leadership program at Laguna Middle School, but a very difficult task at the same time. 72 extraordinarily qualified young people who came forward and went through a very professional interview process. It was a great experience for their future job opportunities. And so I was happy that Ms. Ahern asked me to do that, and I was happy to do it and to meet all of those wonderful young people, including, I believe, the young man who's going to benefit from the decision we made tonight.
Did you say 75 interviews? 72, wow.
That's all I wanted.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mark?
Yeah, thank you. San Luis Obispo 24th District PTA had its annual dinner in this room, and it was excellent. And I just have to say, we were short of desserts. We didn't know what we were going to do. And I got an invitation to judge cupcakes at Laguna Middle School about 2 days before the event, and got on the phone with Kristen Carlin and said, please. And she said, well, you could choose between the 300 cupcakes that my home economics students are baking. So Kristen set up in that back corner. It was phenomenal. And she brought with her Alyssa, I'm sorry about these names, Alyssa Agnulo, Anna Panos, and Lauren Tapp to help serve. They were wearing their brand new Laguna aprons. It was phenomenal. And we also linked with students by having the San Luis High School FFA do our barbecue, and so I'd like to thank Patrick Smith and his crew. And I just want to make a comment on the SROs, if I can, really quickly. The Downtown Association has recently asked the City of San Luis to provide 2 for free SROs to patrol downtown, and I'm going to be watching very carefully because I am interested in whether the kids of this community are as important as the downtown area of this community.